Welcome to episode 162 of Mies on Minis.
Musing and amusing.
This is Keith, and I play Crix and stuff.
What's happening?
This feels awkward. It's like all in reverse.
It's fine, just go with it.
All right, I'm Colin. I play Signar and Scorn.
I don't know who I am. Am I which one am I, Lance or Crump?
Lance isn't not. Jesus, can you read good?
Wait, no, I must be Chad, and I guess I play Trolls.
Ah, and I am Crump, and I play Rhett and the Circle.
And I'm John, and I play Kador.
Dun, dun, dun.
You got AIDS.
You mean Kador.
No, at least you don't have Kador AIDS. It's Kador AIDS.
Alrighty. So, we're going to start with some news and announcements. First things first, Adepticon coming right up here. It's a time of great bromance, as we all know.
Did you see the...
did you see the emails?
Yeah, Tony TBH said. We love you, Tony.
I believe Adepticon begins on the 3rd.
Tony sent us an email after he's like, here's my response to you guys talking about twerking at Adepticon. It's just a picture of Tom Cruise in Top Gun just giving the thumbs up.
We're headed to the danger zone.
Gonna take a ride into the danger zone.
Yeah. Score for that movie.
So,
two songs.
What?
You never close your eyes anymore.
Danger zone.
Get us out of this. Help save us.
So, Adepticon.
Sounds like Colin,
what did you say the dates were, sir?
I believe they start on April 3rd.
The 3rd through the 6th, I believe, is correct.
No, 3rd through the 7th. It is a 4-day event.
Jesus.
That's on Wednesday.
3, 4, 5, 6.
I know math.
It's inclusive.
It's not like subtraction.
I took time off for Adepticon, so I'm probably going.
Sure. Excellent, excellent. On Thursday, there are three events. There's a Blood, Sweat, and Tears that begins at 8 a.m.
Out, too early.
Which I encourage everyone to play in.
Shouldn't that be Blood, Sweat, and Theme Forces?
Yeah, it should be. But that's
it should be.
It's okay as long as you use tears as a descriptor of Theme Forces, because Theme Forces have tears.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's acceptable.
I like tier tournaments.
Who came up with this name?
Hacksaw. The Masters Qualifier number 1 begins at 9 a.m., and the Masters Qualifier 2 begins at 6 p.m. The top 8 from each of those events will continue on to the Masters, as I understand it.
So it's going to be a 16-player Masters.
It's going to be so miserable to be like X and 1. At 6 o'clock.
And you're sitting like, there like
So from what I understand, it's the top 8 from those two going in the one. I couldn't find any more descriptors on the website.
We just need to get everyone in those events to browbeat the TOs to cutting at top 8. It's like, as soon as we get to top 8, cut. so that if we didn't make top 8, we know it, and we can go play in the other event.
I also believe each of those qualifiers are 3 rounds. Three lists.
Oh, three lists?
Three rounds, three lists. Much
each list must be played once. Blow your brains
out.
I
thought we dodged it. Damn you, Adepticon!
I'm
Adepticon!
Perfect. 90% certain that is the case.
Well done. Well done, sir.
Oh, man, I hate three lists, DNC 1. I especially hate it in three rounds.
Three rounds.
I
literally
pretty much hate it in four rounds.
Yeah, we did that. Yeah, I was
playing Crix. Not Signar. Signar's not going to that event. Calling it now.
Yeah, I had to last Thursday at the shop to help Colin prepare for Adepticon. Everyone had to bash their heads into the table and play this format. Yeah.
It was so much fun.
All right. Enough about that. Friday. This is the Iron Gauntlet Day at 8 a.m.
Why does he start tournaments at 8 a.m.?
Iron Gauntlet Qualifier number 1. You're not going to play in it.
I know.
You're going to play like one game on Friday night, maybe. So why the...
No, if they weren't so early, you might play more.
I might actually play.
He might play in the second qualifier.
I might... I may go to...
All right. No interrupting.
I may go to...
I'm going to...
I hate those whistles so much. Gosh. Jesse, the next time I see you, I'm pretty much going to punch you right in the stomach. You'll know why.
Why do I have to miss TempleCon? Why?
would have been so amazing.
Iron Gun Qualifier number 1, 8 a.m. For those of you who like fun, at 9 a.m. begins the Who's the Boss event. Who's the Boss brought to you by Mr. Andy Welton, Major Tusk. At 6 p.m. there will be the second Iron Gauntlet Qualifier. Are they taking top eights from those as well?
Yep, it is the same format. Not three lists, obviously, but...
It's Iron Gauntlet.
Iron Gauntlet, three lists, three rounds.
Oh, man, who wants to play with the team?
Actually, that would probably be a lot
be
more fun.
That would be way better. Because you wouldn't have to worry about, like, character restrictions.
Colin, is this a typo?
What?
Team tournament starts at 7 a.m.?
I believe it is the team tournament, just like not like TempleCon team tournament.
No, I know. Huh? I it's the Adepticon team tournament.
No,
where it's
yes,
unlikely
it is 7 a.m. though.
7 a.m.
7 a.m. on a Saturday morning.
There's such a thing as 7 a.m.
Saturday.
Well, it's
Saturday.
Okay, because the Masters don't start until 8.
Well, if I'm not in Masters, I'll play with someone.
I'll play with somebody if I'm not in Masters. Well,
I will drive there on Saturday so we can relive the Madison dream, but correct this time.
Yeah.
All that I need from my partner is for them to play both lists for the first round. Like, I'll be there. And if I have to, I'll print out a standee of myself. That just like,
oh, my God. We could do such double duty with that standee.
This
has to happen.
This is actually legitimately a bad plan.
And then at 7 p.m. that day, the hardcore will begin. Presumably 50 points?
I believe it is 50 points.
So wow. That's going to run for a long time.
Yeah,
on Sunday, again at 7 a.m., the Iron Gauntlet finale will begin.
Oh, man.
Is Privateer going to be there to broadcast the
final? I imagine.
I have no idea.
The final
Privateer game. Press always has a big presence at Adepticon.
See,
it's
point.
Probably...
Charles Foster III.
I mean,
oh yeah, Charlie's going to be there for sure.
He actually
Charlie's
is going
definitely
going to
be there.
More is there.
I'll kill you.
I will stab you,
Charlie. That was Keith. So if
he
you didn't know who
was.
That grunt was from,
he knows who it was.
He knows
who it
was.
Oh man.
Yes.
Jesus.
So Iron Gauntlet starts early,
and then at the same time is the Commander's Crucible. Which is a format that's growing on me.
Yeah.
As I think about it some more.
What's a reminder? Just give a reminder of the format.
It's X rounds. The list you have to build is X minus 1. You have to build it's either 35 or 50. The one they did at TumbleCon was 50. And 25 or less points of your army has to be non-battle group models, and those go from between all of your lists. And then for each caster, you have to build a battle group and their attachments up to minimum of 25 points.
So you can put the non-character war beast, or you can put the character non-war beasts like Genesis
in every list,
in every single list.
You can put the avatar
in every list.
Oh yeah, I guess it's not part of your battle group. Wow, that's amazing for...
Yep. Really good format for Menoth, actually.
I was dojoing some lists with Arlhar. We were having a good time.
It's like Mangled Metal on Super Crack for Protectorate.
For Protectorate.
Yeah, like it doesn't break us, which is good. Mangled Metal is usually terrible for Protectorate.
The Avatar with every list might be...
It's pretty sweet.
It's playable.
It's playable.
I was dojoing almost Rhett, and I just wanted to...
You could see Keith's face right now.
You also get the book with the Avatar on every list, so it's never stopping like
this. That's what I'm saying. It's incredible for Menoth.
Luckily, we're all safe from John's Protectorate in Commander's Crucible because the event starts at 7 a.m.
Oh.
and it's an event.
And it is a tournament.
Yeah. I'm probably the most likely to be up in time at one of those events if I decide to play out of all of us.
It's a big if, though.
Keith is second most likely because he's probably up the night before and has not gone to bed. So, I mean, that could happen. But
another event I wanted to mention, our very own Brian Finken, Fink Monkey, on the forums is...
March 23rd.
Hosting a Vengeance release event on March the 23rd here in Des Moines.
Believe it starts at noon. Is that right?
Yeah, it's going to have good prize support.
Oh, God, like a regular tournament start time.
It's reg at 11, and then I think it starts at noon.
He has the coin kit, and the coins are amazing.
It's
going to
be a $5 registration, And what do we know anything about the format?
Actually, I'm going to talk to him to see if I can get him to move the registration to $10.
I hope he makes a Commander's Crucible. I want that to be a thing. I want to play in one of those. That sounds fun.
More money, more better?
Well, just because of the way Mayhem does prize support, it's a lot easier to give out prizes to more people.
Yeah, so like $50 entry fee?
No.
Yes.
Like first place watch away with $1,000?
Yeah, no.
Mayhem wouldn't do that.
Like, I think $10 is a really reasonable entry fee, and then it just allows me to spread when I run events. I really like it because I can give out so many gift certificates.
Here's what he wrote on the forums. This event will be a casual event where you have a chance to hang out, earn points, getting games in, assembling models, and much more. Registration will be $5. John's going to talk about trying to get that up to $10 for more prize support. Mayhem Comics will double the registration cost, and we will use that money to pay for the coin package. Some will go to the Terrain Fund, and the rest will be given out as random gift cards at the end of the event. So it sounds like... and then there's going to be a coin kit.
Yep.
So you get coins for doing well, and then it sounds like you have a pretty good chance of getting a door prize as long as you finish the event. And like John was saying, Mayhem is really, really good about giving out prize support. I would.
Yep.
Yeah, they pretty much double your entry fees. So Mayhem makes zero money on the prize support. Actually, they probably lose a little bit because they don't have a true 50% margin on everything that they sell. Some of the stuff is like, you know, they might get like a 48% discount or whatever. So they're actually giving us money to run tournaments at their events.
Mm-hmm.
Or at their. Yep.
And so that's March 23rd.
Legit.
March 23rd, start at noon. So
that's awesome. Actually, I need to run some more events this year.
So, Dan Sammons, there's your answer. There is the next Iowa tournament.
Indeed.
Is that going to just be a 50-point regular?
If I run an
event? I'm assuming
The Sphinxen event?
The Vengeance event, I'm assuming so.
Yeah, I'm going to guess.
Yeah.
It might be 35.
Vengeance!
Casual. So.
All right, Colin, was there another news and announcements that we had?
Yeah, there's a tournament super series for War Machine. It's at Fun Turn Games.
First
Turn Games in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. It's actually four different dates. The first one is on March 1st. The second one is March 22nd. Then April 26th. And then May 31st.
Yeah, so it's like it's very similar to like the Madison 6-pack, except now it's a 4-pack.
There are points.
Yeah, there's points. So like, you know, you get points based on standing. You also get points for bringing a painted army.
I love points.
It doesn't. Yeah, I know you love points. You get points for bringing a painted army, but you only get points for bringing a painted army once. So, like, if in one of the four times you show up with painted armies, you're good.
Gotcha.
And then you get cumulative points for coming to events. So at the first event, everyone gets 1 point just for showing up.
Holy crap.
The second one, they get 2 points. The third one, they get 3. And then if they attend all four, they get 10.
Oh, I love points.
I'm just starting to get so many ideas about...
Points?
Like, coming home and, like, getting a whiteboard... Like, when Keith's asleep, and then I'll just write on the whiteboard, like, clean all of the dishes, 2 points. sweep the kitchen floor,
I don't
3 points, and then, like, I'll wake up.
I don't think he likes those points.
I'll wake up.
I already do all the goddamn dishes.
I'll wake up, and the apartment will just be immaculate, and he'll be like, I've got so many points! I'm crushing you right now!
No, this is interesting, Keith. You didn't see this part. It's Divide and Conquer 1, 50 points. Entry fee is $10. Half the total entry fees from each tournament, so that's 4 tournaments, half the entry fees, will be carried to the final pot, which will be won by the top 3 players with the most points accumulated.
I love points! Points!
I love points.
Yep.
And it's only 2 hours away.
You guys are playing for second and third, because Keith has already decided he's going to try and win this.
Before we bust into spoilers, which we have some of, In honor of he who is not here.
He who shall not be named.
Oh, no. Is
this do you call a group of old pirates?
What do you call them?
The AARP.
Jesus Christ. I love how it took until the P. God.
He's like, yeah. Colin's like, AAR. I'm going to see where this is going.
P.
I love how genuine.
I mean, it's better if Maxon says it, but.
Well, you don't think Keith can do the proper pirate?
No.
Maxon had listened to the podcast for the first time, and he found out when he tells pirate jokes, they are absurdly loud. Like, he had to take his headphones off when he told the pirate joke.
Because he screams into his microphone.
He does. He's obnoxious.
It's great.
You know what's really weird?
I just love how genuine Colin, like,
yeah, just party
enjoyment out
of just it. Just the Santa Claus is a bowl full of jelly.
Like he's just like, clapping both hands, like, excitedly.
We figured out that Colin's favorite type of joke is pirate jokes. Keith's favorite type of jokes
is racist.
No. It's not racist.
He kind of loves it.
No, it's kind of racist.
It's anything pertaining to Chad's catchphrase.
Oh, goddamn it. Not my catchphrase. I hate you guys.
Wait. What's what?
That's misogynistic.
Oh, okay. That is your catchphrase.
I hate
this. Oh, my God.
I hate this so much.
Perfect. Now that we have settled that that is Chad's catchphrase.
Into spoilers. The first thing we're going to talk about is we have pretty much everything on Imperatus.
Except for point cost.
Except for point Except, value, yeah, the point, speed, mat, rad.
We have those.
What the gun does.
I would be, yes. We have pretty much everything we need to know about it.
Well, okay, it's the same kind of gun as Hyperion.
No, it's not.
No AOE.
It's a halation cannon.
It's called the halation cannon.
Oh, halacious, am I right?
Which, I looked, somebody posted the definition of halation, and that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I'm wondering if there's a special rule
so
for
it. So it could have a special rule on it. So, yeah, the X factors at this point are really the special effect, if any, on the and special effect and range on the cannon and the point cost. Everything else, I can make, I'm willing to make a fairly good educated guess at this point.
The issue is the mat is either 7 or 8.
Yeah, it could be an 8. An 8 would be exceptional. A 7 would be just fine.
Yeah.
So a lot of people were talking about like how sweet this guy is with Vyros 2, but the first thing I thought of was Vyros 1.
Yeah. First thing I thought of him was give him an armor buff, and this thing is friggin' unkillable.
Yeah, like, well, Vyros 1 has inviolable resolve.
Yep.
And then his feet.
Yeah, with the sidestepping.
Yeah, his feet is bonkers on this. Yep.
Is Virus yeah. 1? Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
every time he kills a guy, he gets to gain a focus.
It's like good. Being able to move where you are and continue to gain focus is really good.
It makes him like an actual Mullet Karn style. So
if the gun has a good range and has a good effect on it, like then Virus's Bird Eye 2 helps that out, too. Yeah. Like,
I think this... I'm feeling pretty good about him. Based on the partial picture of the grid, it's most likely this exact same grid Discordia has, which gives him 32 boxes before Phoenix Protocol kicks in, so a grand total of 47. 47 total boxes to take it from full to gone.
No. Disco doesn't have... You're talking 32 with the field.
Yeah, with the field.
Yeah, with the field.
And right. then the Phoenix Protocol kicking in.
Right.
Regenerating the entire field and 5 separate systems.
Yep.
Assuming no arc node.
And if you don't kill it all in one turn, then it's got D6 Phoenix
Protocol. Wait, are you... Movement, cortex, left arm, right arm.
Generator.
There we go. There's the first one.
No, I mean, it's actually just crazy.
47 boxes at 13, 18, or 13, 20 with inviolable resolve. Would you say that's better or easier or harder to kill than an archangel? I think harder. I'm going to go with harder to kill than an archangel.
There's definitely a lot
harder
of...
harder to kill than a mountain king.
There's definitely a lot of, like, heavies, like, character heavies that have been printed recently that are just, like, a pain in the arse to kill.
Yeah.
And so someone just falls along those same lines, like, Gatorix and Tiberian.
Yeah.
And
one thing that's kind of interesting on the Phoenix Protocol is... you can only do it during your maintenance phase if you haven't been disabled. So, and it doesn't have like a place effect like respawn. So, if he's in harm's way and getting killed, like something can happily, you can Phoenix Protocol it and can continue killing it. So, I'm thinking like a situation where a Bronzeback gets into it. Not sure the Bronzeback's going to be too impressed. Like, he's just going to be like, all right.
Oh, somebody ran the numbers for it, and without IR, I think the enraged Bronzeback would take it down. With IR, I don't think it does.
No, I agree with that.
I'm not even sure it triggers.
How does this work during the maintenance phase?
You just can heal it.
You just say, I'm activating Phoenix Protocol during your maintenance phase.
Right.
Yep.
And so if it has a bunch of damage, you can, like...
So it can't be... Okay, so the way that I was imagining it, so that's where my hang-up was that Phoenix Protocol was sort of like that exemplar Seneschal... Where like they kill it, and you're like, I'm gonna have to Phoenix Protocol during my maintenance phase, and then it just stays there, and then so it's either so if you use Phoenix Protocol during the maintenance phase, you're not necessarily getting the full effect.
Right. But right. I can see a situation where the generator's out and you're like, yeah, I get the field back and the generator and then I, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Or the cortex is out and yeah, you're like, sure. God, I really want to allocate focus to it. I'm going to Phoenix protocol.
Actually, I think the hull counts as a system too. So
No longer. In Mark 1 it did.
Okay.
They removed
it. Yeah, when Keith was talking about that a while back, I had never heard of that before.
Yeah.
Mark 2 players looked at me like I was crazy, so we looked it up and I was crazy.
Are we 100% sure it doesn't have an arc node?
We're not 100% sure. No. We are nearly 100%.
I am pretty sure that arc nodes are listed on the top of the pages in the books. The general abilities
are usually listed at the top there.
It could have like an affinity, like things can be channeled through, but that
also, if it had an arc node, you would expect the 5 damage grid to have one more on top of it, because that's where they added the extra boxes on the Phoenix.
Mm. Okay.
So the grid depicted is Discordia's, not the Phoenix.
So that's sort of like the thing on this guy when we were talking.
This is such a cleverly cropped photo. I'm not sure if it was super intentional or if it was just...
I'm sure he just like accidentally was just like, I'm going to Snapchat this.
Yeah.
And then
I think he probably has the role special issue virus.
The tactical tip starts with special. And, well, it also in his fluff says VYROS.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard it's Viros's jab.
We know it's Viros's. Hand me this.
VYROS could literally be any word. We don't know what the end of that word, you know, is.
Veracity?
Yeah.
Spelled? Is that even a word? What's going on here?
It could be anything.
I mean, I guess.
Oh, my God.
Doug Seacat could have written new words.
Maybe it's an elven word.
Yeah.
We don't know.
We need Nigel here because I feel like we should build a Viros 1 list and it should have the word veracity into it.
So,
like, I'm pretty sure Nigel's the name of a list.
When we were talking yesterday at the shop, I'm excited for this guy. However, the number one reservation is point cost, obviously, because if he's a bananas amount of points, he's kind of iffy.
I mean, the most I can reasonably see him being is 12.
Agreed.
And I think he's worth 12, and I think he's most likely going to hit that 11 point.
Yeah, mark. If he's 11 points, I am in love with him.
I mean, just looking like Phoenix Protocol obviously is a special thing, so we don't have like a good standard for what they cost that ability at, but. I'm guessing a lot.
I mean, I feel like if the Phoenix is 10 points, this should at least be 12.
Well, no.
I'd except be for you if no longer 12. Have an arc node.
Remember, arc node is minus 1 point.
Well,
combustion
sure.
is
also,
another big
well, but they cost sidestep very highly, though.
Yep. Yep. That's true. I'm just saying, like, an arc node is... So. We know that an arc node is worth 1 point. Like, everything with an arc node is pretty much 1 point more than it should be.
So, when we were talking about this at the shop yesterday, because he lacks an arc node... I have sort of have some reservations about him because of like what casters he can be with. Because there's a lot of casters in Rhett that have spells that they would, gain a lot of power in their gameplay by having an Arcanode like a Phoenix on the table.
Should be up there somewhere.
So unless the rest of his card's like amazing or and there's point values, he actually seems kind of like a more of a niche guy like to put with. Viros, for example. Like, because Viros 1 or 2 are just like, yep, don't have spells I want to channel, so I never take an arc node.
It seems... what casters want an arc node?
Kalissa, Ron, Gareth, Assyria.
Okay.
You want me to keep, like, literally every rec caster that is not Viros 1 or 2?
Or Ozion, really?
Yeah.
Or Raven?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there are casters out there, and, like, Raven having a beat stick like this in her list wouldn't be bad.
Two reach power 19 weapons.
Seems really good, especially if it's mat 7 or 8.
Yeah.
Viros' feet
I mean, it's
finally
gonna be,
does something!
It's going to be at least mat 7.
Yeah, but it might be mat 8.
But if it's mat 8, that's incredible.
I don't think it'll be mat 8, but he's got def 13, so he's got a pretty beefy cortex, so it's possible.
I'm imagining 12 points for him, and I don't think 13 is out of the question.
Is out of the question.
What are the Phoenix Blades called?
Thermal Blades.
Thermal Blades.
Yep. Okay, so that's probably what this is.
Yeah,
yep, that definitely looks like an L.
They looked exactly like Thermal Blades in the picture.
Right.
The art.
Seriously, I would play Viros 1 with this guy, because this would be so much fun. And then, gosh... He's just like the best flank guy ever because he goes and kills a bunch of. He just like engages the heavy that you want to kill, and Viros is like, all right, I'll come up and kill that. So.
Might actually play Viros 1 for once.
Yeah, that's awesome.
His
Birdman.
Now that his feet actually does something.
I wonder what its animus is.
I mean, between...
Phoenix Protocol. You can cast it on all your guys.
Oh,
it's
my
awesome.
God. It's so good.
Yeah, because between sidestep and his feet, with mobility up, it's getting into the realm of the mullet card.
No, it's I would think of it more, depending on his mat, right? So kind of like a Warpulse Stalker with Berserk with Chromac, where he just like goes in and is like, kill those infantry for free. It's like I have Berserk, because every time I kill a guy, I get a focus to buy an attack.
Yep.
And then it's like, all those are dead. Like, hit that guy, sidestep, kill these guys, you know, whatever.
And it gives him that, as long as you're sidestepping off things you can kill reasonably, it gives you like 4 extra inches of threat for free.
Yeah, so he's got like a 15-inch threat. Out of the box.
Seems good for that reason with Lyros 2 as well. Like, so you pop your feet and then have sidestep, or have pop your feet and then have synergy going.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, you don't even want to kill anything because you're like, halfway through your turn, you know, you don't want him moving forward and then being able to get even deeper with sidestep.
Yep.
I feel like he should have combo strike for fluff reasons that you would never use.
He might.
It's like he's immune to free strikes on assassinations, because you're like, charge in, punch that guy, sidestep. Oh, wait, sidestep gives you immunity to free strikes anyway.
Yeah. Hello? Yeah.
But
it's exactly like that.
Charge in and then like take a free strike, and if you knock some system out or something, you're just like, Phoenix Protocol.
You can fix it in your next maintenance phase.
Oh, yeah. Dang it.
They gotta be disabled.
They have to like kill you. Yeah.
Nice try, though. Mm. I mean, actually, if I think about it, the Phoenix Protocol is actually a really well-designed rule.
Yeah, it's...
Because almost every way I thought of to try and break it, I'm like, nah, that doesn't work. Huh. No, that doesn't work. It's still pretty good. But
it's really good. Like, well, at its worst, it's just 15 extra boxes.
Yeah.
That's really good.
It's sort of a little more to the ish, right? Because if they, like...
Then any overflow
right.
on killing
yeah,
people.
Yeah.
So it's probably, like...
Right. Army. All right, idiots. Why don't you put Phoenix Protocol on all of your warjacks?
Yeah, why not put non-racist force fields into our army, too?
Non-what?
I love Chris.
So I was talking with Chris. I was talking with Chris, and, like... the Mega Minz guys make force fields that are friendly faction, which makes zero sense, right? Because it's a force field. So, like, it's as if we had a in a bubble, we had a white guy and, like, a black guy, sure. Or, like, right? It's just one person of either ethnicity, and the only person...
It's me standing next to John.
Yeah. And for some reason, if I go to shoot at Keith in the force bubble... The bullet gets deflected, but if I shoot at you, the force field opens up and you get hit in the face. Except for Discordia, I discovered his friendly faction when I like read her card, or his friendly when I read her card closer, and I just like sent Chris that text. I was like, "What? How's this? What this whole time? That doesn't make any sense." And he's just like, "It's because Ron builds his warjacks without the racism circuit."
All right. All right, we have more spoilers. I mean, is there anything else you guys want to talk about in Imperatus? I think it's going to be a really, really good addition to Red Armies. And Red Armies starting to become a little more dynamic in what you can do.
Yeah, so. especially when we find out what its other rules are. Like, because it's almost assuredly got more rules on its gun or, you know.
What was the quote? I forgot. Somebody said it where it was like, if rep players aren't happy with this book, I can't help them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody's...
That may have been. But it could have been the same person that said every caster in this book is better than Butcher 3.
I think it was the same person.
So, true story.
I do think it was the same. Speaking of that, next turn.
Excellent segue into the full spoilers for Resnik 2.
Thank God his feet is the
spoiler
way.
Spoiler alert. He's not better than Butcher 3.
No, he's not.
Who was the one that said Butcher 3 was the worst out of this book?
We don't know.
Somebody did.
It was me.
Here's my biggest problem.
I'm sorry.
With Resnik 2, like, I'm going to start complaining out of the out of the box, but 13-17 is not good enough.
No.
He's got permanent wind wall.
All right. He does have permanent wind wall, which helps, but I'm pretty sure Ion on Holt plus Storm Wall equals a very dead Resnik.
Yeah.
Like, it might take a couple
13-17 on a huge base. Like, 13-17 on a small base? Or on a medium base?
That's
would
right.
almost
pretty
be
bad.
That would almost be a deal breaker.
It's already pretty bad.
On a huge base?
Real bad.
Okay. I really it's like we were talking, like, what were we saying last night? Because it's like you have a small base caster, and you just think about, not even guns. Like, just thinking about the number of guys you can get around them in melee, you're like, that's kind of a defense in itself. Because, you know, like, think about Lich. Like, he has to go through real contortions to, like, pop his feet and get a bunch of guys on your caster. You know, like, he has to have really specific, like, configurations.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or you can block it really easily by hiding behind walls.
Do you want to be Resnik 2 in a world where Epic Asphyxius exists?
But like, if you're on a huge, if you're on a huge base, if you're on a huge base, it's like, all right, I'm going to set in my first heavy. I'm going to set in my second heavy. I still got room for like six or seven more like small base models. A couple, you know, like,
and my colossal.
Yeah, anything with reach. Like,
this is why an ability that would slam things away would be so good.
So,
I'll leave you jump 11, arm 22, shooting, and also never dying.
Now, he is focus 7 now, so he can camp to 24. And at 13, 24, he's pretty durable.
Mm-hmm. He's, like, worse than Terminus.
How come, why does he not have, like, Defender's Ward? Or
I don't know.
So, let's go over his special rule, because we haven't talked about that yet.
Oh, he's got Flame Blurs?
Yeah, so he's got a rule called Lamentations of the Suffering, which is just as long as Resnik has a focus on him, non-magical ranged attacks automatically miss.
That's It's like
basically permanent wind wall.
So kiss Eris, shoot his focus off.
That's going to happen.
Well, I mean, you can't play him without a devout.
Because you'll kiss.
No, almost certainly not.
No, it's absolutely 100% required.
Yeah, I can't even.
And
like,
he almost has to give a focus to it every single turn just for the spell word.
It depends on what you're playing against, but certainly, yeah.
Yeah, he's basically, in some armies, he'll be effectively.
The weird thing is,
five.
With his feet, I want him to be the Crix Drop. But at the same time, I'm terrified for him to be the Crix Drop.
He's a huge man.
Oh, no, you killed Tartarus. Now I need sevens to hit you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
And how many of them... And yeah, I need sevens to hit you, and I only have 10 chances, so hopefully two of them get there.
And there's no way to knock down casters with a Elitch list.
Well,
there's no way to knock that caster down.
There's no way to knock down battle engines, dog.
Okay, well, that's true.
He's a little steady.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah. I mean, he does have some interesting things.
Spell list is cool.
No, his spell list is actually really good.
Is
Creator's Wrath
is actually hilarious.
With his focus 7 and his reach.
Creator's Wrath is the Severius one where he gets an additional die to hit and damage.
Yeah, Severius too, yeah. Yep.
Melee only, right?
Indeed.
Yeah, that's pretty funny on it. Like, so,
because he's another, 7 like, reach, so.
He continues the tradition don't get within charge range of this horse caster, or you will die. You know.
Yes.
He also has a couple of really good buffs.
It's way easier to avoid this guy's charge because a huge base charging your casters.
Right. You're like, is there a wall within 4 inches of my caster?
Yeah.
I'm good.
But he has Death March. So with the book and Rupert.
Errants.
I was thinking more like TFG. You know, book Rupert TFG.
What about Idrian's?
Potentially. I don't know if Death March is great on Idrian's.
The Vengeance move, you don't think? Like, because they can, like, Vengeance into prey range and then, like, get an extra
whatever.
So, for those that may not know, Death March is +2 mat and Vengeance.
Yes, for a target model unit. Yep. Or warrior model unit.
But I'm sorry, you were saying...
I was actually probably just unit.
Zealots?
I
was saying TFG.
TFG.
It is
because
only
making them mat 8, and then with the Vengeance move and Tough Checks, like, they become a very efficient tarpit, and he's going to need stuff in the way. So I think it might be really good.
Yeah. Any unit wide mat buff is just really solid. Like regardless of what else it does, and then Vengeance is a problem rule for certain units. Just period.
Well, it's a particularly good rule if you have tough no knockdown stuff. Mm-hmm. So, and I like Vengeance a lot better on reach stuff. So that's why I went to TFG first.
As soon as I saw that spell, I was like, oh man, that spell's amazing. And then I started thinking through the catalog of protectorate options, and I wasn't.
No,
super enthused about any of them.
It's not great on errants, or it's not great on non-reach stuff. I mean,
and all of your reach weapon masters are 5 man units, right?
Yep.
So,
some things that are kind of interesting: the fact that he's on a huge base with a 14-inch control means that he covers a lot of the board. I mean, if you just think about 28, 33 inches across.
Yeah, that's like, yeah.
It's huge.
That's very significant.
Yeah.
From a center point, it's an 18-inch radius, basically.
Lamentation is much more interesting with 7 focus.
A little less.
Because there's only...
One other caster in the game. Two other casters in the game are Lamentation, focus 7.
Yeah.
Well, there's only one caster in the game that can purify you. Is that correct? Without having it cost 6?
Right.
Oh, yeah, Harby.
Vale.
Oh, also Vale, yes. Yep.
Yep.
But, I mean, I'm not sure.
Lamentation is one of those spells that is, it's kind of a 10% spell. When it's good, it's amazing, but usually it's not good.
It's a trap!
I mean, with him, I feel like it's going to be just a minute. It's a huge trap, because people are going to be like, well, I have to play him forward so I can catch the caster with Lamentation.
I'm 13-17! Yeah.
So, magic weapons on Eris. She charges her caster.
I'm kind of thinking, and I don't know, this might be crazy, but if I were going to design a list for him, I think it is would be designed to fully camp, move forward, feet, and then back up and play the like hide in the back as best as I can.
His feet is good enough that it might be he might be able to get up way on attrition, like enough so that he can't be killed. I mean, he's definitely one of those casters where he's playing the game to kill the models that you have that can kill him.
Yep.
And then once you do that, like, he can just run the table.
It's a checkmate.
Yeah. But the problem is that how many models do they have that can kill him? You know, because some armies, it's going to be a lot.
The other thing that's kind of interesting is he doesn't really have a way to buff the hitting power of his army.
And he doesn't have any way, right?
Right.
No.
Besides choir, I mean.
No, that's true. He has multiple ways of buffing accuracy, but he doesn't really buff the damage.
Yeah, I mean, protector stuff hits pretty hard anyway, but he doesn't really have, like, he has an interesting toolkit, but it's not a very...
His toolkit is not as impressive as some other casters in the faction, R.E., any of the Kriosses, or Severi.
He does have one of the better protectorate feats, though. Yeah. I think he might have one of the best protectorate feats, actually. Yeah,
so we should probably read really the feat.
Enemy models in control suffer -2 defense when an enemy model in control is boxed by a ranged or melee attack. RFP, that model. Place a 4-inch AoE on the model box, and every enemy model under the template takes a power 12 fire damage roll.
The second this got spoiled, I looked at Keith and was like, good. It's as it should be.
Yep.
Not the as broken as possible way.
I mean, I think
which
we all
was have. The friendly faction models that kill something. Like, the enemy model didn't have to be in a... Yeah. John was like, I could see it being that one.
No.
And we were like, no.
John did not say that. No, I didn't. I 100% said that I guarantee it was going to be the other way.
Oh, yeah, you're right, John.
God, you guys.
I Lance. Can't argue with you when I know I'm right and you say otherwise, so I'm just going to agree with
Lance,
you.
No, I 100% said
you
that it wasn't that way.
That is 100% what happened.
God, F you. You just make me so angry because I know what I said.
I thought it...
Indeed you
who
do.
Who said it then?
Good thing it was recorded.
I don't know. It was me.
Lance, I said it.
You need to.
Yeah, I believe that actually.
No, Lance, you need to harp that because when you raise that point, Crump, you're like, well, we don't really know. Like,
aren't
if it's...
I editing this one,
or are you?
No, yep, Lance. Whatever.
No,
I'm making it harder for whoever's editing it. Shut up.
I mean, if it's me, I'm not doing that. Like, I'll just we'll have Rint fact check it.
We know John's right, so there's no real point carrying on with the conversation.
This is danger zone, right?
All right, he does have a. He does have an interesting spell that's new. The flesh is weak. It's cost 3.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's range 10. Range 8.
It's
sorry.
Range 8.
Wait.
Yeah, it's POW 12 AoE 4. And then living and undead models hit cannot run or charge. So it's another one of those situational spells.
That's super. It's not model unit?
No.
Nope, just the models hit under the AoE.
And then, so the models hit under the AoE that don't die already?
Yeah, but it stops war beasts from, like, charging
No.
Him. War beasts are living models.
Yeah. They're not... They are.
Yeah, I guess they are. Yep.
Because when that originally got spoiled, they were, you know, it was just, like, living and undead models, and I was like, that needs clarification, because if it's units, that spell is complete buns for the reason Chad just pointed out of, oh, congratulations, those guys that are dead can't run or charge, because they're dead.
If it was model slash dead? Unit, it would be broken.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
But I don't think it would be broken, I just think that'd be good.
It would be
good. It'd be very, very strong.
Yeah, it'd be rebuke.
No. It'd be...
Except you got...
It'd be similar to rebuke.
It would
it'd
be rebuke.
Similar to rebuke.
Except you could still make special attacks.
So. And right. You could shield wall still.
Yeah.
And it,
but you could hit multiple units with one of them. You'd be like, well, you've got two units interspersed. Bloop.
I mean, like the best drift.
It also costs more than rebuke.
At POW 6, or at POW 6 blast damage, not a ton of infantry is dying to that, though. I mean, unless you're boosting. I doubt they're boosting, because...
It's weird because it's sort of cross-purpose, because you're, like, throwing this AoE. You're like, yeah, take this AoE infantry, but then you're also kind of like, I hope this AoE doesn't kill him.
Well,
you know, it's like yeah. It's like a kind of like
it's sort of a way for him to layer defenses.
You could stop a Bronzeback from charging him or whatever.
I mean, it helps against like some like bricks or something, like you know, like a it's really unit good against, of warders.
Yeah, it's really good against multi-wounder and like shield wall.
Yep.
Yeah,
but I mean, the shield wall guys still can just shield wall forward.
But they can't charge forward.
They're not gonna anyway.
Yeah,
they're gonna shield march.
I don't think it's. I'm not sure it's a very good spell. Like,
I think it's a situationally really good spell, and probably most of the time not very good.
So. Yeah, I was kind of hoping it was gonna be a debuff with just the wording of the spell. The flesh is weak.
It makes sense.
This guy feels exactly like Resnick One. Spell list is all situationally good spells, but typically bad.
No, actually,
do you remember?
I actually like Resnick One spell list better.
Do you remember Mark One Resnick One Firestarter?
No.
This spell's ridiculous.
We didn't start the fire.
He had a spell called Firestarter, and it was cost one. You target a unit, or you target a model, and then that model makes an advance towards the makes a full advance towards the nearest model, and then they're both set on fire. Like
they didn't have to like hit it or anything.
As long as they met, like you hit the model,
they touch each other,
and then if they reached base to base, then they were both on fire. Like
that's
like,
amazing.
Yeah.
So it's just like he incinerates a guy, and that guy's just running around like, ah, and just like trips into another guy, and then that guy's like,
yeah.
So did it keep going?
It didn't change.
No.
It only like, cost one.
It'd be like your army's dead.
Yeah. Well, I feel like taking an avatar with him might be kind of legit.
Yeah, Iron Aggression is really dumb on the avatar. Free charge is ridiculous on that model.
Yeah,
Mad 10 boost to hit all my tags. I needed it.
The boost to hits charge. Are almost inconsequential, but the free charge is huge.
Yeah, I mean, so that way it doesn't really matter nearly as much how much focus you actually roll at the beginning of the turn with him.
Oh, God.
Do you have a list in mind for him, actually?
I just off the top of like when I build lists, I think about modules that I would like with his abilities. So I talked about the TFG, and then to make use of his feet, I was thinking like, man, you need some good ranged attacks, but at the same, well, maybe not necessarily, but at the same time, the things that have ranged attacks that I'd want to play, like Errants, for example, I really don't like Errants without a defensive buff because they just die too fast,
right?
And Idrians are really also, without a defensive buff, tend to die really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And Zealots would be fine. So Zealots would be pretty good.
I mean, Zealots are in every Protectorate list, pretty much.
Well, every one of my Protectorate lists. Because I like
the list is sort of shaping up like Zealots, TFG, Devout, Avatar.
Yeah, but maybe we just got to go into the well and... It's enemy models, right? So you could put things like Kel Balok in the list. You could put Alton Ashley in the list.
It doesn't say boxed by a friendly faction model.
By a ranged or melee attack.
No.
So you could put highly accurate accurate ranged attacks. So,
I mean,
give Kel Balok like explosive rounds. It's just like, here you go, buddy.
Like this could actually be like Forge Guard might be kind of sweet with +2 Mat and Vengeance.
Potentially.
That is something I love doing in Mercs.
You'd have to put the priest on him, but that's not a big...
Is Death
no, no, it's not. No.
It's
not friendly faction.
It's friendly.
Death March?
It's friendly. Because I can put it on Grizzen or Gators or...
Fair enough. The only time I've been exposed to it is in Mercenaries, where it's impossible to bring friendly models.
It's like, I'm a mercenary caster. It says friendly faction.
Although...
Hooray!
If I put the attendant priest on them, then I could tough no knockdown them.
Yeah, I mean
the attendant priest fixes all their problems.
Is the perfect unit attachment for Hammer.
It is. I remember when that guy came out, Jim was like really, really ticked. But so I'm starting to think like, you know, it'd also be really good.
What's that, John?
If you were going to put like Alton Ashley and Kel Balok and maybe Terran.
Want to make Ocean's 18 Resnick 2 version?
Maybe.
I don't think he runs that, but I do think that it...
You could put in... let me finish.
Yeah.
Because the -2 defense is actually pretty good. Mm-hmm. But you could put in Dougal McNeil and then Hernan John because they have a nice long range, range attack, and then he becomes Rat 8.
It is Ocean's 18.
I mean, kind of. But I mean, it's... The thing is, Protectorate isn't really blessed with good long-range guns. Like, don't really have that. Good use of his feet to reach out and...
I mean,
because
except for, you know,
Redeemers and Indicators.
I thought about a redeemer. The redeemer's, I feel like, a trap with him because
too much focus.
When he feeds, he's gonna have to camp or else he's gonna die.
Yeah.
And so if you're feeding three to the redeemer, like your camp has suddenly gone way down.
But
yeah, I was thinking in the same direction. I had this thought before it escapes me. I really like the inclusion. Terran works for Protectorate.
Yeah.
Yes.
I really like the inclusion of Terran and Kel because Kel aiming with your feet can reliably shoot into melee, and Terran always can. So when you get guys bunched up on your tar pit, that's going to be where the feet is most effective. And that also allows you to free up your tar pit for more movements, as well as get the most work out of the explosions on the feet, is like Terran black pennying in and Kel shooting into melee there, as well as giving you the targeted attacks for clumps of models that you find.
If you're playing TFG, you could fix the Redeemer problem by just taking a Reclaimer.
Maybe
on how many TFG you have on the list.
The problem with that plan is the Reclaimer's got to be in position to collect the souls off the TFG.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Honestly, I think if another heavy goes in that list, it's going to be run by either a Bastion Seneschal
Tristan.
Or it could be Tristan.
Plus a Redeemer actually fits in this list really well. So I could see doing that.
That makes a lot of sense.
It could be that Jack that no one plays yet.
That's a good idea.
The Sanctifier is also fine.
Yeah. The duct tape Reclaimer Jack.
I like the Sanctifier on the Jack Marshall.
So no arc nodes, so you can basically cross Layman or Flesh is weak off of.
Well, he is speed 7, and with the Hierophant,
you can also ride by attack.
You can ride by.
Yep.
Something we didn't. I didn't notice this on his on the spoilers.
I wish he had a gun.
His takedown.
I really wish he had a gun.
Yeah, his takedown and terrifying
That's
as well.
That's really good.
Yeah, he has the most RFP out of any Protectorate caster, so he gives us sort of an answer.
Compared to zero.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, the only other person that has any RFP is Krios 3. He has Krivas, which is pretty weak.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Me too. so it kind of... I need to play him. I'm actually starting to kind of warm around about building a list where he camps a lot.
I think Resnick 1 RFPs on his melee weapon.
Yeah, he does. He turns them. He turns them into racks. It does RFP.
So is this guy a potential?
Only once per turn, though, right?
Yep.
Also, it's his melee weapon.
So, do you think he might be a potential Ravana drop?
Oh, Vindictus does too. He turns them into zealots.
Well, here's the deal.
Oh, that's scary.
I think with the devout, he can be a Morvana drop, because you can take take the Sunder Spirit off the table, and actually camping. Morvana doesn't have a lot of ways to super kill him easy.
Just the Stalker.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Does he get up to POW 20?
Yeah, I guess they can't ever trigger the dogs to charge you either.
Oh, yeah.
As long as he's camping a focus.
Yep. Yep.
Unless he gets a Thrall gun you.
So I actually think he can play a game against Morvana. That's interesting. Because he doesn't really... Love purification, though. That's going to be really annoying.
Yeah. I see Morvana being like, well, you have some things that bother me, but I'm really going to bother you, like Mr. Upkeep Caster.
Yeah,
but
although you can RFP a lot of stuff on his feet turn.
It doesn't hurt him. Like, how does it hurt him? Like, it takes Death March and Iron
Death March,
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Creator's Wrath.
I mean...
Lamentation.
Probably be punching some stuff.
And that matchup,
she's purifying
cast,
Lamentation.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a win for you.
Yeah, that's fine.
But she's probably just not going to come close.
It's sort of a win, right? Because you have, what, like three upkeeps you're probably going to be upkeeping?
What'll be interesting is...
What is Creator's Wrath? I don't even know what that spell does.
It gives him an additional die on attack and damage, melee attack and melee damage rolls.
Okay.
I can build the list to do enough damage on his feet turn to make her feet less good. Because you can RFP a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff. Because the AoEs still trigger RFP too.
Nope.
Actually, I don't think they do.
It's just the model.
They don't die by range or melee attack.
It appears to be worded precisely the same way as Kane's feet.
Yeah.
So, no.
Ranged or melee attack.
It's still really good.
Yeah.
I mean, if you RFP 4 models and then kill 10 models, like, that's...
Yeah, I mean, if I can RFP the medium bases in that list,
it
might be all right.
I think he's a fine Morvana drop.
Yeah, I don't think it's great, but I don't know that I don't think you can really ask for great Morvana drops. Like, you should just be happy with playable Morvana drops.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy for a 40-60. Like, I wouldn't be terribly depressed with that. So.
I mean, a 40-60 for you would pretty much be a promotion in any matchup. So,
wow, harsh.
Man, when did this happen? Why are you taking shots at me now?
And he wants to be the nice one.
Go up to the fridge, get yourself some ice, and apply it to that burn. Thanks for the sunglasses.
Well, there's no other way to get this behind us other than to do it.
Yeah, I'm going
to
go upstairs now. I mean, we could just... Well, that was fun talking about battle reports, so moving
the
on.
The masses have spoke, apparently, because Colin foolishly asked them what they wanted, and the replies were more battle reports.
No, I think really what they want is for us to be in pain, so they're getting what
they
want.
So we are cranking it up to 50.
TempleCon Masters Battle Report.
This will go quick. I only have two games to talk about. Like, actually, one and a half game to talk about.
No, you have one.
What?
Everybody gets one.
I'm going to go first.
Okay, good.
So, first off, Keith, we were in Masters.
Together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We were in Masters, and Keith informs me right away that I'm getting paired against him first round. That sucks. Let's go over our lists, I guess.
This is a three list format, Steve's Masters.
Just go over the list you chose.
Just the list you played.
Well, yeah. So, I can't remember my reasoning for choosing this list. I think that I was like, I chose my Hunter's Grim list, which is Dire Troll Blitzer, Troll Impaler, Troll Axer, Rune Bearer, Max Scattergunners with UA, Max Burrowers, Wrong Eye and Snapjaw, and then a Felcaller, a Chronicler, and Victor Pendrake. It's the one that I've been dojoing. I dojoed a little while ago, and it's kind of a variation of a list that Valkyne posted in the List Busters. I really, really like this list a lot. And I was thinking, you know, with my Scattergunners and like, Grim just has epically amazing infantine clearing power with his feet. And he's also got a really strong assassination just by himself, like, just with his battle group. And he can sort of see through... He can get through a lot of, you know, Crick's sort of standard protections against assassination with Mage Sight. Like, he can see through Lich Clouds, he can see Denegra stealthed, you know, and allow his whole battle group to shoot at them. Like, I felt like it would probably be a pretty good one for me. So I chose this list based on that logic.
Seems sound.
Yeah. Smart.
Yeah. Well, I'll go into why this is actually the incorrect choice later.
Yeah. I was debating between Denegra's because he didn't have upkeep removal in any of his three. Oh, he had upkeep removal in Runes of War. And the Runes of War drop was the only one that was highly concerning to me. And I felt that Denegra 2 had a reasonable play against Runes of War, and Asphyxius obviously has a fine play against Runes of War, and I was probably okay with Asphyxius against any of the three lists. But I was also fairly confident in the scenario, it being close quarters or fire support.
It was close quarters.
So a pretty winnable scenario. So I ended up just dropping the Wraith Witch.
Yeah, Epic Denegra. And so as soon as he picked Epic Denegra and I picked Grim, I was like, wait a minute. This is my one list that doesn't have a Creel Stone in it. I have no way of dealing with Incorporeal. I had exactly one magical weapon in my... Well, Wrong Eye has a magical melee weapon, and Pendrake has a magical melee weapon, but I have exactly one magical gun. And so I was like, oh, crap, I should have picked Runes of War. and then those were the two lists I was debating between. So as soon as he picked Epic Denegra, like literally the moment he threw his card on the table and I realized this.
Face palms.
I was like, God damn it. I have to kill her. That is my only chance of winning this game.
Yeah, long story short, put him in the checkmate position and a little bit of the old 14 on dice.
So, yeah.
The end.
that was
a little bit more thought that went into it than that. Like, because my first turn, I could have done some other stuff, but I just decided to take. He ran Denegra far enough forward that I knew Grim could walk forward and shoot her with his gun. And so, like, taking a shot on a full camp caster is not something that I would normally do on the first turn when I can, like, take a shot at some, you know, other infantry models.
Like a high-value solo.
Yeah.
Like, I'm coming for you, buddy.
But I was just like, literally my only chance of winning this game is to just kill her, so I have to do any damage I can possibly do to her. So I just took that shot at her and did 4 damage to her on the bottom of one at full camp. I rolled, like, a 12 or something.
Yeah.
And then on his turn, he walked forward, feeded, and...
Charged forward, Howlmouth to remove my charge target and pull Snapjaw out of the protection trap. Of the trap. And then healed for two because I, after feeding, I determined that the only incoming damage would be from Grim. So heal was identical to camping and just better for the future.
It's better because it, it's two extra health for the rest of the game rather than just that one turn.
Yep. So it left me on a hill, incorporeal, no camp, or one camp.
In range of only Grim and nothing else.
Yep.
Also, his death jack made my burrowers run away. So that was my long-term plan, was I was like, if for some reason he doesn't manage to kill me, my burrowers were set up to, they were behind a forest, like behind line of sight, like behind, like far enough away that Dagger couldn't feed on them. And the whole plan for them was they were just going to dig, they ran the first turn and then they were going to dig second turn and then pop up third turn to stop him from
auto winning on scenario.
And then they ended up running away to the death jack.
Yep.
And so my Grim is like standing like 8 inches away from the death jack. He's frozen in place. He's like 9 or 10 inches away from, it was like 9 inches, 9.5 inches away from Denegra. I'm like, this is literally the only way that I can win is by killing him.
Yep.
So I rolled a 12 to hit with mortality. I rolled the 6 that I needed to hit him with the gun. And then I rolled a 14 that I needed to kill him. That was just...
Well played.
So you hashtag...
One shot that.
That was a terrible.
One shot that.
You can watch the game on Maddie K's website.
I think my favorite thing was that Josh called that before it happened.
Josh asked me like, but this is the way it happened. Like, because it was when Keith was doing his turn, and like halfway through doing his turn, and he's killing Snapjaw and like running all of his stuff in terrible position. And I'm like, I was just gonna lose. And Josh is just like, you look pretty calm, Chad. Like he made some comment. He's like, you look pretty calm for like what the game state's looking like. And I'm like, yeah. I look calm because I already know how this game's going to end. Like, he's already moved all of his models that can possibly block line of sight to Denegra. So Grim is just going to cast mortality on her, and then he's going to one-shot her. Like, that's going to happen. And I was like, and he was like, I'm going to tweet that. I was like, yeah, tweet that. Hashtag one-shot that bitch.
I wish...
And then it happened, and Keith was really sad.
I wish that Maxon had, as it happened, FPS dug to that moment. And just boom, at the top of his lungs yelled, boom, headshot.
No. So he tweeted it, and it was funny for me and sad for Keith.
Could you have blocked line of sight to Denegra by putting, like...
Not really.
Two random models
there
in front of
her? There were miraging...
Scattergunners
and a blitzer. And, I mean, Denegra was the only model that, like, was immune to the incoming hail of fire. So I mostly kept things out of threat ranges.
He could have had the Satixus Raiders instead of charging Snapjaw, like, run and form, like, a layered defense against the Denegra to make it very difficult for me to kill her. And Scattergunners, because of order of operations issues, I can't pop my feet before clearing off with the Scattergunners.
Right.
So the best I can do with the Scattergunners is have them aiming and trying to shoot at Satixus on a hill, which is still really, like, they need, like, 11s.
It's bad.
Right. So I think that you probably could have blocked off with, like, a whole layer of Satixus Raiders, but that would have been all that they did, you know? He also, it was not really possible for him to do his trick of engaging Grim at reach with Satixus Raiders and then freezing me because of the miraging Scattergunners. Like, Mirage is actually just a really good...
Yeah, no, it's great.
...counter to her feet, because the Scattergunners can... Mirage out of melee range, out of melee range, and then aim, and then clear off the rest of the models that they need to, you know, be able to shoot. But yeah, so instead he decided to try and kill Snapjaw, and then like you determined after the game was over that killing Snapjaw was, because the way you told it to me was your entire reason for killing Snapjaw was basically to just feint like you were going to go for a scenario win, when all you wanted to do is just kill me.
Yeah, it also gave me a very strong possibility of a scenario win. So.
So, yeah.
If you somehow manage to cook up a defense for Grim.
So, yeah, instead of spending all of his focus, if he had just charged forward, popped his feet, and then camped 7, and then did everything else exactly like he did, you know, I probably would have, like, I would have been effed, you know. I would have had to try and mirage, like, Scattergunners in the way of Grim.
I don't think the way I played it was wrong, because it gave me, it put me ahead on scenario, ahead on attrition, and with a very strong assassination.
Yeah, and it gave you
just like a one in...
And I left you a 4% out, I think.
I don't know. It was bad. The odds were bad, but it was literally my only choice.
Well, see, so you have to hit the mortality, right?
Yeah.
Well, otherwise, you can roll a 16, I guess.
Otherwise, you can roll a 16.
Yeah.
I don't have to hit the mortality, but there's no reason not to, because I can only get the one shot,
But I'm just saying the 12 to hit is 40-ish%
in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
And then a boosted 6, which is like more than 90%.
Yep.
And then a boosted 14, which is, I don't even know, it's very bad.
So you're 40% times like 20%. Right.
So it's like 8, like less than 10%.
Yeah.
Like,
this is getting worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, no.
It's like negative 10%.
Why don't we just rub it in for Keith? Like, yeah, but he really got you on the river there. That was.
No, I mean, it was just like, it was one of those, I think that there's a learnable moment, there's a teachable moment there. Because, like, I determined at the beginning of the game that my only option of winning the game was to try and kill him. And then I played the game to that point. And, yeah, I mean, I definitely got lucky. I definitely should not have won that game. But it was literally the only choice that I had. And so it was one of those situations where, like, I could have had my scattergunners, like, gone and shoot a bunch of stuff. And I could have had Grim do some other stuff. And I could have, you know, like, done a bunch of stuff on my feet, or, like, you know, on my turn to try and, you know, lessen the damage. But it wouldn't have been, it would have all been completely meaningless because he would have just killed me.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, because Deathjack just walks up and eats you, right? So,
or Denegra just pops me back into the middle of her army, you know, like, or whatever. Like, I mean, he can try one and then the other, like, you know.
That's an interesting thing about Denegra, too, is that her overall plan is so strong
mm-hmm.
that it's really easy to telegraph. So you can set up situations where you have a chance to kill her.
I mean, yeah.
So
even in that situation though, like my chances of, you know,
yeah, we're really low.
Like at the beginning of the game, I was just like, yeah, I'm like 9 out of 10 times I lose this game, and then 1 out of 10 times I get really lucky.
Yeah.
And so yeah, so I moved on. I was feeling pretty good about Masters at this point because I felt like Keith was probably one of my hardest opponents.
Certainly wasn't going to be me. So.
Next round, I got paired up against Will Pagani, and I actually really liked the matchup for me, and I really liked the scenario. What scenario was it, actually? It was...
It's the one where the objectives contest the flags.
Fire support. And I chose to go Runes of War. He was playing Rhett, and he chose his Virus Griffin spam list. And I really, really liked this matchup for me, but this video is also posted online, and I kind of donked it up. I made a number of really bad mistakes during this game. That were mostly just due to my inexperience with playing the list. I feel like if I get more practice with this list, like it's clearly a very strong list, the Runes of War. And I just need more practice with it. I've never played it in a tournament before. This is actually my first time playing it in a tournament, and it was my second time playing the game, period, or playing this list, period. The only other time I'd played it was against Colin, like, almost a year ago. So, yeah, I'm very unpracticed with this list, and I was just sort of going off of the muscle memory of Doomshaper 2, who is a little similar, because he's got the same battle group, or a very similar battle group. He just does very different things. So my big mistakes were, if you go and watch that video, I could have purified off Synergy from Vyros the turn that I went forward to pop my feet, and that would have been 2 less focus that he would have allocated.
Oh, my Jesus. His feet is such a kick in the nuts against that list.
It's okay. I mean, the feet, like, honestly, only, like, it usually only takes out the... All I was doing was, it was just, like, dinging up the shields.
Yeah, yeah, but...
But it was good. It's definitely, like, it's okay against that list. You really want to try and get the feet on their caster, but, you know, he's so fast, he can just walk out of it.
Yeah.
But in that situation, it would have still been good because he would have had to... Ride by attack to walk away, cast synergy again, and then walk back into the feat to get synergy on all of his warjacks. And it would have been 2 less focus on his warjacks. In that turn, he ended up killing Mulg exactly with his last attack. So 2 less focus would have been...
So Mulg would have lived.
In a live Mulg, and then I win the game. Another big mistake that I made was I had a Runeshaper shoot a rock hammer at an Invictor that was standing, like, right next to Iris. And I did 4 damage to her on the blast damage roll. And then with the second Runeshaper, instead of shooting at the second Invictor that was standing next to Iris to just try and kill her with a 7.
Yeah.
I had him try and knock 3 griffins down. So knocking the griffins down didn't really do that much for me. It let me kill those 3 griffins trivially. I probably could have killed them anyway. It would have been a little bit more dicey, but even if they live, like, it's not that big of a deal. But killing Iris means that Elemental Communion is just alive for the entire rest of the game. And then I, it, that makes a huge difference. Because she was just shooting off, basically his, he was just having Iris shoot one War Beast to get Elemental Communion off of it. And then it was just, he was surrounding, you know, he was just piling on whatever War Beast got shot by her and just killing it with all of his Griffins. And they were all, none of my War Beasts died so quickly and so decisively that I feel like, and he was doing such a high volume of attacks on them, having plus two armor on every attack like would have made a big difference and probably let me survive a couple more turns. And it, I, all I need to do is survive like a couple of turns of him throwing his lights into me before it gets to the point where they just can't kill anymore.
Yeah, you know, where the synergy chain is not large enough.
Yeah, they're so reliant on the synergy chain.
That is why I like having heavies inherent in that list.
So that was another mistake that I made. I could have tried to kill Iris. I didn't. And then lastly, I still had a shot at winning the game when he left Virus a little bit too close to an Earthborn, it looked like. So the Earthborn was standing in the wreck marker, in the sea of wreck markers that I was creating, like, slowly.
He's just like, this is heaven.
And then I, when I get rush on him, then he's got a 12-inch trample. And Virus was, like, it looked like Virus was definitely close enough for him to get to me, or for me to get to him. But we ended up having the judge measure it, and it was the closest measurement, like, I've ever seen in War Machine. It was, like, exactly, I mean, he put the, it looked to me like they put the 10-inch, or we put two of those 5-inch templates down, and then a 2-inch template, and then a 1/2-inch template for the 12.5-inch. And he's, like, Chili said that it was exactly far enough away that there was, like, a paper's width in between. Like, it looked like they were touching to me, but he said if you slide it, like, you could, he could apparently feel it, like, just barely bumping. Yeah. Like, it was super close. I honestly think that that was basically just a coin flip, in my opinion. And the judge that happened to be adjudicating it just put the coin flip in his favor instead of my favor. I think that could have, if another judge was there, that could have easily gone. I'm not saying I don't trust Chili.
Chili, you scumbag!
I'm just saying, like, that was such a close measurement that I think that could have easily gone in either person's direction. As it was, like, I still could get to him because I couldn't goad off of the trample, but it's one less fury that I have to and kill him with.
Which greatly reduces your odds of killing him.
Yeah, and so then my game plan is I have three attacks at him, Matt 6 versus Def 15. He was camping nothing, so I was dice plus 2 with my Earthborn. And so I need to roll, I need to hit 2 out of 3 unboosted 9s with Fortune, which is like 50-50 again, I think.
A little less.
Like, a 9 with rerolls is about, it's like about 50-50, I think.
It's less. 8 is what you can reasonably expect to hit.
But I hit 1 and then rolled a 10 on the damage roll. It's left him with like 6 or 7. And then I missed my other two. And
could
I think
you
if I had
boost a hit on the second one and then maybe just kill him?
No, because I hit on my second one.
Oh, I see. Because you missed. Yeah,
I missed the first one. Right. I missed the reroll. I bought another attack, hit, did 10 damage. And then if I had one more fury from not having to goad, then I would have just been like, buy boost to hit.
Yep.
Then you kill him. And then like with reroll, like rerolling to hit a 9 like is super easy.
Yep.
Boosted, I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I probably kill him. And then I needed to roll like a 5 on or a 5 or a 6 on damage to kill him. So it was still really close. I think, again, that was a mistake going for the kill. I think my Earthborn probably should have been, because then he turned around to kill my Earthborn with Viros, and he killed him again with his very, very last attack.
So pro.
So, and that was after he had killed my Creelstone. So, you know, the Earthborn was just hanging out there in the middle of nowhere with armor like only 18. And he killed him, and it took like his entire activation to kill him. So if my Earthborn was armor 22, you know, and I was just like, I could have still probably won that game just by having my Earthborn walk over and eat a light, you know, pass the turn, say go. Next turn, eat another light, pass the turn, and say go. Like, there was only like one or two left at that point.
You still had your stone. The Earthborn was just out of it because he trampled forward.
Yeah. No, he was still in the stone, but then he just killed the stone because I had only the stone run.
I see.
I
see. So you would have been able to make it armor 22 for pretty much the rest of the game.
Yeah, for pretty much the rest of the game. His chance, then, he probably would have tried to go at it for a caster kill then.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, then, you know, Doomshaber could be, like, armor 19 at least, so.
Yeah.
It's a 5.
I mean, and then, like I said, after the Earthborn kills, like, one or two Griffins, like, it's. I also realized after the fact that I was playing, so don't blow me up, Internet. I was playing Doomshaper as if he had powerful attack, because I'm so used to epic Doomshaper. So there were a couple of times in that games where I got like one or two free damage boosts with Doomshaper. I'm not a cheater.
Oh my god, blow him up so hard.
I did not realize that until last weekend at Mayhem when we were playing Runes of War, when I was playing Runes of War against
Does
Colin.
One still have the plus one strength for each focus on him?
No.
No, he never.
For Viri on him?
Nope.
No, he has great power.
Who had that?
That's boost both for...
Great power is upkeep of spell for free.
Oh. Was that a Mark 1 thing? Did somebody have that in Mark 1?
Yes.
I don't know. None of my casters had that.
That
in
is
Mark
something 1. In Mark 1. It's not something in Mark 2.
I think you're thinking of a spell Veil has.
It might have been Nemo. I think it was Nemo. Had plus one strength for each focus. He was... Anyway.
Anyway, it was a really close game. There were a number of times where coin flips could have come up in my favor, but they didn't. Like, the matchup was really good for me, but it just sort of... I think that that game was lost due to my inexperience playing my list versus Will's extreme experience playing his list. And then a number of coin flips coming up, you know, not in my favor. Like, I still... I think I could have won that game. I don't...
I'm going to tell basically that same story.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, I'm just saying, like, so I'm not, you know... We'll definitely played a good game. I definitely made some mistakes, and I identified those mistakes. So, I mean, the video's up online. Like, it was a good game. So I recommend checking that one out. Just, you know, be aware that I have some extremely sloppy play tendencies, and Will's very gracious with that, so...
It's not like he came up with his own turn.
Why didn't you just give your Earthborn powerful attack, Chad? That would have been
easier. Was another thing. I forgot about deploying my army 2 inches forward because of the theme force. I didn't realize that until I was all deployed and he had already gone his first turn. And so I was just like, God damn it. And he was like, that's fine. You can just run like all of, whenever you like go to move your guys, just like have them, give them an, all like a plus two inches
movement.
Of extra move or whatever.
That's
just,
so not
just, but you have to say Pagani every time you move every
just activate Thyra's feet.
Chad just sitting over there going, Pagani, 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 Pagani.
Yeah,
Pagani,
yeah,
Pagani,
the first
Pagani.
Turn of the game, I'm like, these three rune shapers are going to run. And he's like, up. And I'm like, Pagani, Pagani, Pagani.
That's amazing.
So.
Cool. Did you have a third round then, or did you drop?
No, and after that one I dropped because I just wanted to, because you were still in it and I wanted to be able to watch you. So.
Yeah, John, go.
All right. Well, my first round I got paired up against Jay from Chain Attack, who was playing Haley 2. And I got extremely lucky in this game. And I actually did some things I'm not super proud of in this game. So if you watch the video, because this will also be an in-game game.
Wait, did your caster gain powerful attack?
No. I got.
Did you run an extra 2 inches on turn one?
With your entire army?
No.
What a cheater.
But if you watch the video, I originally had Eris deployed on the advanced deployment line, and then I moved her back like 2 inches because I just didn't want her to get drifted on by a time bomb, like have him run Thorn of Thorward, just drift a time bomb, and because Eris is like most of my entire game in that matchup.
You know that can't happen, right?
To the advanced deployment line with Thorn.
You know, he can't target her.
He doesn't have to target her.
Yeah, something else.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It definitely can happen. I mean, I don't think it's very likely. It's actually very unlikely, and I didn't need to play for that, but it's just one of those things where just I was being overly cautious. So,
yeah.
And I recognize that now in thinking back to the game. Like, that was a mistake. And you'll see why it's important here in a second. But I'm playing Sorcha 1. And my list is Nigel's list that I fixed after playing it for a day in...
Nigel would take issue with this.
What's that? In the team tournament? No, I did fix it.
Fixed. You're welcome, Nigel.
It was broken before.
Well, I mean, I did things like I took the Kossites out and put in Fullness Hunters. And if you're going to tell me that was a mistake, we can definitely have that discussion.
Yeah, let's do it right now.
I'm saying I think Nigel would tell you that that's a mistake.
Yeah, he would.
In fact, he played your list versus Colin, and he was like, this list is dog crap.
Yeah,
well, yeah. I mean, I did beat him twice in one game.
Yeah. All right. No Kossites. Seems bad.
Sure. Anyway, I played Sorcha with Behemoth, Silas, Fullness, minimum Greylord Outriders. So the reason why I'm in that unit is you really don't need five of those guys. They get in each other's way too much because of the large bases.
Mm-hmm.
Widowmakers, Ayana and Holt, Iris, P. Iris, Gorman DeWolf, Kel Balok, Alton Ashley, Dougal McNeil, Widowmaker Marksman, Harlan Versch, and the Gobber.
All the oceans.
How much does it suck to write this list down on your tournament sheet?
About as much as it used to be writing Gifts on Given decks for Magic the Gathering.
It actually isn't that bad to write. It's worse trying to make sure you have everything in play. So you're just sure. Like, you're just like, well, which stupid solo is this one? Because if they're not painted like Harlan Versh and Kel Balok, and you're just like, well, they both have hats, so I have two hats. I'm good, you know. But so yeah, I sit down with Jay, and Jay is playing Haley 2 with Thorn and a bunch of dudes, and he's so. He moves Haley pretty far forward on turn one, and Nigel had just been screaming at me all night that I didn't play Sorcerer aggressive enough, and it kind of got in my head a little bit, so I'm like, I think I can feed on him turn one and shoot him with Eris, because with Dougal's mini feet, she shoots
range 14.
Range 14, and she speed 7, so you have a 21-inch threat, and it was really close, really close. And so I really debated. I'm like, am I really, really going to go all in on a turn one? Bottom of 1 feet with Sorsha. I mean, that just seems like such a donkey play.
This is the exact... This is John has never done this in his life.
No, I literally don't go all in like that. I just don't do that. But Nigel's like, no, it'll be fine. And just yelled at me all the night before. And I'm like, okay. And if
that was your first mistake by listening.
Right. Yeah, okay. Fair enough. But anyway, so I feed it. And my thought process was if I do hit Haley, even if I don't kill her, which I probably don't. I don't think I had anything I could really get to her.
This is Eris 1.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So that would actually be a swift kick in the nuts.
Yeah, yeah. So he can't shake Thorn or Haley.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, so, man, that's really good.
And it also
and
puts me...
Just win, and then you can just wind rush forward next turn and knock him down.
Yep. Yeah.
Or just play for scenario, because at that point, her entire army spends a turn outside of the zones. I'm the second player. I score. And then she's got to try and, like, fight her way into zones. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, it was going to be really good for me had it worked.
That makes a lot
of sense.
I
mean, honestly, she just dies. I don't think there's any way she can live.
Right. That, too. Like, I could probably just kill her.
Yeah.
With Eris in aiming range.
Yeah.
I'm going to knock her down
with Tempest anyway. And anything blocking line of sight to her also is probably going to get caught in that Tempest. Like, it was going to be bad.
Yeah.
So, like, it was a really good gamut, except that after I moved Sorsha... two things happened. Number one, I thought I was going to catch Alexia, but I didn't realize there was a model that was sort of that was going to be blocking line of sight to her. So I didn't get P Alexia. I got her in the feet range, but I didn't get line of sight to her.
Mm.
So that was problem one. Problem two was after I moved Sorsha, I realized very quickly, I mean, not really quickly, I measured my control range like 10 times that I was going to be a half an inch short of shooting Haley.
With Eris.
With Eris. And I'm I think I just died. Like, I think I literally just... I'm just dead.
Yeah.
You were short with Eris because...
I already covered that. I didn't deploy her far enough. Yeah. Had I deployed her on the advanced deployment line, then I think I'd blow that game out.
Yeah.
But also, if Eris had been deployed on the advanced deployment line, I'm going to give Jay credit and say that he wouldn't have moved Haley up as far.
Maybe.
I'm pretty sure he wouldn't have. So...
Having played against that list now... It's really, really, really hard to determine, like, it, when you don't know what it's going to do. It's like, that's a really weird list. I'm not sure I really know what their game plan is. I'm not really sure I respect it. Like, I'm just going to play my game like normal, and then you move forward, and then they're like, I gotcha.
It is exactly, that is why that list is appropriately named, because Nigel's opponents are like the quote-unquote bad guys in Oceans 11, 12, and 13 that are just like, oh, I have no idea what's going on, but I'm going to get those guys. Oh, I figured out their game plan. Wait, there's a loophole I missed. Oh, crap. All right, now I know their game plan. And then there's just a, gotcha! Like, had the money was on you the whole time. Suck it. That's what that list does.
Yeah, I love it, but yeah. I'm not sure. Jay is really good, so he might have not fallen for it.
Yeah.
But.
I mean, it's a Masters game, so you can't just assume. But so at this point, I've allocated one to the Behemoth so it could trample forward. And so I've Wind Resource. I've got three more Focus, and I had her reloaded, so I could have taken two boosted shots.
At Haley
or anything else. But at this point, I'm like, okay, now I'm in mortal danger. So I immediately ship that plan. Camp all three of my focus because that's like the only way I'm going to survive. And then I move Eris up and, well, I move mini feet with Dougal, move Eris up and shoot Thorn because without Thorn, it's a lot harder for her to kill me because it's literally just Haley and P. Alexia that has a ton of stuff between us and her. And I knew that he'd be able to clear a lane and that I was going to get hit with Alexia. Probably the a mistake that I made at this point is I killed some gun mages because I kind of had decided early that I was going to kill them fast because they were really the only threats to all of my
sweet solos
and Widowmakers. And if the gun mages go away, then I can just pick apart his army at my leisure, pretty much. So I killed like 4 gun mages, which was 4 corpses for Alexia, which is a lot more attacks and boosts.
No, it's so bueno.
Yeah. So, certainly that was probably a mistake. I should have not killed any gun mages because they were going to be frozen for a turn anyway. And then I'm much more likely to survive. But the way that game played out was, you know, Jay did a lot of really smart stuff, positioned Haley such that he could TK both Sorsha, and he had to roll a 10, which is not that unlikely with a Squire reroll. So,
yeah.
I've got no complaints about that. TK'd Sorsha, turned her around, and then... used a few guys that were out of the feet. There was a few Forge Guard that were able to clear enough of a space so Alexia could get TK'd and then get into Sorsha's rear. And then, so the nice thing is I Windrush, so I'm still def 16.
Yeah, so she needs 10s.
So she still needs 10s to hit with, I think, 14 total corpses.
Mm-hmm. Should be 13 unless you killed 5 things.
I must have killed 5 because he had 14 total. Anywho, so he begins, you know, buying and boosting to hit. And because I camped 3, I lived at 4 life.
You made a quick choice.
Yeah, I mean, it was...
dice off, what, 5? If you're camping 3, she's 14 base.
Yeah, yeah, so I was 17, so dice off 5.
Alexia? She's about 12.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm 17.
He's 17. Because he's armor 14 base, camping 3.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah. I thought you meant so pow 14.
No, base. No.
Yeah.
It's 10s to hit, dice off 5.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So... now I'm just like sitting there like, oh god. So now I'm looking at this table and I've just had Alexia just shove her sword into me and like leave me at 4 life. And for some reason I got Windrush confused with Cyclone, so I thought it ignored freeze strikes. So I actually cheated in this game too because I Windrushed out of combat.
He made a freeze strike. I think I recall watching that.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not sure. Maybe he did.
We'll see it on endgame.
I mean, he would need to roll a 10 on 2 dice. So
the way that I recall it, like...
Can we change our name to Cheats on Minis?
I don't know. I guess it's online, so... Yeah,
yeah, we'll look. I don't think he made it, but he very well might have. But anyway, I owed him a free strike. And if he rolled a 10 on 2 dice, I'm on 4 camp, so he doesn't necessarily automatically kill me, but he certainly could at 4 life.
Yeah.
Like, it's definitely possible. It's a little bit dicey. I mean, the 10 is the hard part. I move Sorsha and I Windrush and I get behind Behemoth and I position such that Behemoth, it's kind of tricky, but I'm directly behind Behemoth, but if he slams Behemoth, Behemoth travels through forest. So I'm like, I don't think I'm going to get slammed over.
You were actually thinking about the slam?
I positioned her back so that she couldn't get knocked down by it. Because if she gets knocked down, if you look at my positioning, she's as back as far behind the Behemoth as I can get, and then towing into the forest.
She's like an inch and a half or 2 inches away from the Behemoth.
Yeah.
And then if he's,
which is as far as I could move.
He can only move half distance to begin with, because the only thing he can slam the Behemoth with is a smaller base. So that's half off the bat, and then if he's moving through rough terrain, then it's a quarter.
Right.
And so if you're an inch and a half away, then it's actually... If you're more than an inch and a half away, it's actually impossible then.
Because he'll get slammed.
And I really wasn't, and I'll be very honest, I wasn't like considering how he was going to slam me. Whenever I put my caster behind a large base, I consider if I'm going to get slammed or not.
All right.
Like, I mean, it's just sort of muscle memory that I have. Whenever you hide your caster behind a large base, that's actually a really good habit to get into. Like,
it is.
I was watching
the game, and the slam took me entirely by surprise. Like, when he started going for the slam, I was like, oh, wow, that's...
Yeah.
Thorn's one of the best slammers, because he, with a TK through Thorn from Haley, it gives him a 5-inch... It gives him a 5-inch movement before he slams. So he gets to like pick whatever angle he wants.
I'm surprised she didn't try to TK the Behemoth too for a better.
He did, but he played. So here's the part where I kind of not real proud of myself, because I got a little nitpicky at this point, which is not normally like me. Maybe it is. I don't know. A little
you
bit.
You want to win?
Only remembering facts.
Right. But he charged. Haley forward, and he was trying to charge in such a way to keep the Behemoth in his front arc,
uh-huh.
But his declared charge target and the angle he had to take to get into melee with the thing he was charging into, he couldn't really maintain that.
Uh-huh.
And the thing that got kind of weird is I was trying to help measure because Jay was really nervous at this point.
Uh-huh.
And then I also had a judge right there trying to help adjudicate it. So between the judge and I and Jay, like, it got a little bit where Jay was like, well, like, once we placed his model, changed his facing, and then he realized Behemoth was out, and he's like, well, then actually, because he had declared that he wanted to keep Behemoth in the front arc, but there really wasn't a way to do that, and so it got kind of weird. And the judge was like, well, this was the only place you could put the model based on your charge target, so you don't have the Behemoth in your front arc, so therefore he could not TK Behemoth. it didn't turn out to matter too much, I don't think, because when he went to slam with Thorn traveled. This is where, I was nitpicky, but Thorn was going through rough terrain, just the edge of his base.
Yeah.
Which is being picky, but his path did take him through the rough terrain.
It was one of those moments where they have the laser. You put the medium base down where Thorn's going to end his movement, and then they do the laser thing where they have the laser go from the edge of Thorn's base to the edge of the
where it's going to
of
be
the medium base proxy where he's going to end up, and then you see how much of that laser goes through rough terrain, and it was just like hovering, like basically it was just barely hovering over like an inch and a half or 2 inches or something like that of rough terrain, like as the person's like, you know, unsteadily holding it with their hand. So it's like, yeah, it's touching it, I guess. Even though, like, it's barely, like, you know.
Yeah, no, it was really close.
But, like, technically, yeah, it is touching. So, like,
I felt really bad for calling.
It was, like, on the outskirts of the rough terrain.
Yeah, it still goes through.
It is,
like,
yeah.
But I felt really bad for calling the judge over to adjudicate that, because I was just like, I don't want to measure this.
I would feel bad not having a judge adjudicate that.
So the judge adjudicates it, and he declares that Thorn is a 16th of an inch out from slamming Behemoth, which pretty much just gives me the game because Haley's right in front of my army.
Yeah, sure.
It doesn't actually give you the game, as the way that I recall it. But
why is that?
Because he still had a shot at you.
Yeah, he only got that shot because I gave him the slam.
Oh, okay.
Otherwise, Behemoth wouldn't have been knocked down.
Oh, okay.
It literally gives me the game. But after, like, and thank you, Josh, for pointing this out. But Josh gave me like a dirty look, and I was like, all right, Josh, what's on your mind? He's like, we're just like sitting there. And he's like, there's like a hovering laser involved. It's a 16th of an inch. Like, there's no way you can tell me that that's in or out. And I'm like, you know what? That's fair. And I think Jay should have killed me. So I looked at Jay and said, that's in. And I looked at the judge. Is it okay if I just say we pretend like we didn't call you over and that's in? Because that's too cool. Like, I didn't want to win that way.
Yeah.
You know? And after Josh.
I know exactly.
Josh in complete opposite of Magic the Gathering player form.
Yeah. I mean, as soon as he pointed
it
out.
He's not really a Magic player. Yeah.
As soon as
he's better than
As soon as he pointed it out, I immediately realized that I was being a dickhead, and I did not like myself at that
Josh
moment.
Josh was your conscience.
I know.
What the? Mind blown! Yeah.
So hopefully he doesn't. Hopefully he doesn't listen to this, and hopefully nobody.
There's
like,
no way.
We're not telling him this.
Right. Anyway,
I'm sure someone will tell him to listen to this.
By the way, my conscious Josh would have like a patch over his eye and like a hook
be
for
like,
a hand.
Yar, Cullen, what she be doing today?
Would you tell? Here's my only request, listeners, is that if any of you do talk to Josh and tell him to listen to this segment, please just tell him. Yeah, it's in the big battle report segment. So just listen to that whole thing. It's in there. You'll find
and
it.
And he will never do it.
Anywho, Behemoth does get slammed, but he rolls a 5. And
I respect that, by the way. I just want to point that out.
I appreciate that. It was the right thing.
That's. I think that's what I would have done as well. I would have just been like, yeah, you got it.
I honestly deserve to lose that game. So just for the way I played, I made some bad decisions. I mean, I made good decisions with the information that I had, but when I had less information, I made some very poor decisions. Like not having Eris deployed on the advanced deployment line certainly was bad, and then going for the turn 1 feat was really bad when she was out of range. I mean, that's 21 inches, so I don't feel so bad about not being able to eyeball that. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So Behemoth gets knocked down. He rolls a 5 for the distance, and so I call the judge back over. I'm like, now you got to adjudicate how far the Behemoth slammed.
This judge is just like, God.
I felt really bad for the judge. I'm just like, I'm sure he's just like, this is the worst game ever to adjudicate.
Oh,
so
man.
there's actually no way that the behemoth could get there, even if you rolled a six.
Yeah, because it's half distance from slamming a larger base, and then a half distance for going through rough terrain.
Right.
But it's still closer than...
But I just wanted to be sure.
So the important thing is that the behemoth gets knocked down, so now Alexia has line of sight to shoot with her hand cannon.
Yep.
As I recall correctly, he dead-eyed Alexia.
He did. So he came up, he had dead-eyed Alexia, walks forward with her, takes the four dice to hit. I'm a 20, because I'm wind-rushed, towed into the forest.
Yep, yep. So it's a coin flip.
Yep, so it's 50-50. He hits.
Yep.
And it's power 10, so, and I'm camping 12.
Power 12. Power he needed 12. A, from what I remember,
he
needed
a nine. Nine, and he rolled a five.
And he
on
rolled
three.
A five on three dice.
And didn't kill me. So
and as soon as that happened, he just extended his hand and shook her.
I mean, there's no way I don't kill her. Yeah. She's right in front of my army. I just Tempest, and then Behemoth just shoots her with two boosted bombards. Like, it just doesn't matter. But, so Jay was a very gracious opponent. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't feel like the game was contentious, even though maybe I described it that way. Like, we were both being really nice. I was just pickier than I like to be.
You can go and look for your and decide for yourself.
Yeah, but I definitely was. I hee-hawed my way through that game. So I channeled Crump, got through a game where I didn't deserve to win.
Jay got unlucky, but it sounds like if you had made the correct plays with Alexia, like deploying her as far forward, like I don't know. I mean, maybe he'll even just say, like, I find it hard to. If he's never seen this list before, like, now that he's seen this list before, he's probably never going to make that mistake. But, like, if you've never seen this list before, like, I find it hard to see that, like, whole thing coming.
Yeah, well, so. The other thing that happened, too, is if I had seen the... I didn't determine exactly where Sorsha was going to be. I just figured I'd be able to finagle a place where I got line of sight to P. Alexia.
Yeah.
And I measured the range, and I'm like, yep, she's in. And Jay's like, I don't think you have line of sight. And I looked down and went... Nope, sure Ruh-roh. Don't. This is a problem. But I could have easily taken like a Widowmaker marksman shot or something to, or like a Widowmaker shot and shot like one of the guys blocking line of sight.
Before Sorsha.
Before Sorsha activated. So that certainly was a mistake.
That's just inexperience again.
Yeah.
Like her, I mean, I know that they nerfed her feet like forever and a year ago. So a lot of people didn't even know that it used to be this way, but it used to just be everything in her control radius.
It used to be Kriosses.
Regardless of line of sight.
Yeah.
And then this was like way back in Mark 1, like in the beginning of Mark 1, like when they nerfed it because it was so powerful.
In the land before time.
I'm sure you can imagine, like, back when the feet used to do that, like...
Yeah.
You know, before Shake.
How incredible. Like, even without Shaking, like, just that effect, like... It's good that it has a restriction, like, because people, like, compare Sorsha's feet to Kriosa's feet. We were just talking about this last night.
Mm-hmm.
People compare Sorsha's feet to Kriosa's feet because they have, like, somewhat appreciable, like, or somewhat comparable, like, effect on the game. It's like, oh, everything in your army basically becomes auto-hit, and then on your turn you don't do very much. But it's like, for Kriosa's feet, it's like, yeah, everything in your army is easy to hit, and then on your turn you don't do very much.
Move or action.
Sorsha's is everything in your army is easy to hit, and then you literally don't get a turn.
Yeah,
it's not just you don't do very much. Like with Krios, you can still like stand up, shuffle your guys around, like reposition, like take some ranged shots. You know, immune knockdown guys can still like do their like can still like play their game. Like Sorsha's is just literally, I get to go twice. And I get to kill a bunch of your stuff that's, you know, easy to hit now.
By the way, Cotter players, shut up. If you can't win with P. Sorsha, like, that caster, I played her for 10 games. She's ridiculous. You always have game when you have her.
I would 100% be playing her.
Yeah.
Yo.
Yeah, like, holy crap. That caster is unbelievable. Every game I played with her, I was like, I just have dealer's choice. I can do whatever the hell I want.
But she doesn't have Desperate Pace Winter Guard.
It's not even like, I haven't popped my feet, so I've got a chip and a chair. It's like, I haven't popped my feet, so I don't care how the board state looks. I'm winning this game.
Yeah.
Until you pop your, you know, like, until you walk down to the table and you're like, who's popped their feet? You know, and Sorsha's like, oh, I've popped mine. You're like, ooh. It's looking like it might be not be good, might not be good for you. Like until, but if you sit down, like regardless of the board state, if you're like, who's popped feet? Sorsha's like, no, I still have got mine. You're like, ooh.
Looks
bad for the other guy.
Yeah.
You're like, they've only got like four models over there. You're like, ooh, yeah, it's going to be bad.
Just to recap, I mean, even though I got lucky, so round one I beat a very good, accomplished player playing Haley 2 with a lot of practice with his list with Sorsha 1.
Yeah. And you got a little lucky, but like the fact that that can even happen, period.
Yeah. I mean, that should tell you that that caster is pretty strong.
Yeah.
So round two, I get paired up. God, that took forever. I'm sorry, you guys.
I thought it was interesting.
Unacceptable.
As long as it's interesting, I don't care.
Yeah. Round two, I got paired up against Brian White playing Lich 2. And
Well, the guy plays Crix.
Yeah, he did at TempoCon. And I can tell you that his Lich 2 list was a little bit non-standard, or it was more, I call it Tomguan style. It
had open Tomguan style.
Yeah. It had...
and Keith loves that.
Tom.
That was going to be the name of his team last year. I don't think he ended up getting one. I don't know why that wasn't the name of their team this year. It was a mistake.
It was certainly a mistake.
Whenever they went around...
Brian White's
Lich list had a Helldiver, one Arcanoid, Fullness Hunters, two units of Bane Knights, a Siren, Min Blood Witches, plus the Hag. I think that's most of it.
Is there a Tartarus?
Oh, yeah, Tartarus, obviously.
Did you say two Helldivers?
One
Helldiver.
One Helldiver, one Arcanoid.
That sounds like an assassination list.
It is.
This Hunters.
So it turns out you don't need Tartarus's Curse if you can be knocked down, and it's really hard to stop a Helldiver. So most people are like, well, how does a Helldiver hit a slam? It doesn't have to. You just run some random dude.
It hits the back end of a Blood Witch.
Yeah, who gets slammed through Sorsha, and then when Sorsha gets knocked down, she dies. So when I sit down to play this game, I'm really thankful for it all. He also had Bile Thralls. That's really important. So.
Yeah, of course.
That's a given.
What?
I'm so thankful that I have Keith in my meta, and I've played against Lich enough times that I can formulate a plan. Because you have to have a plan for Lich when you're playing. Otherwise, you just lose.
True.
So my plan is, number one, Sorsha cannot get something slammed over her and her die.
It's a good point. Not dying.
Step one of every
one
turn.
To winning the game.
So
don't die.
What I identified is I would use Gorman's Cloud to block line of sight. So even if she got knocked down, it would be difficult for him to get Lich in a place to get enough feet targets on her with line of sight to her. So if I could combine that with a forest or another hard-to-kill model.
Like a behemoth.
That would be good. The second part I decided is I was going to make him feet to kill behemoth, which means the behemoth could not be anywhere near. He couldn't be charged by the Bane Knights with a parasite early.
Yeah.
So behemoth has got to. So I think I went second. So I counter-deployed behemoth away from all his Banes.
That's weird. Considering, his just trying to figure out how you did that when he had 20 mains.
They were all to one side.
Oh.
So, and the Nis were to the other side. So I counter-deployed Behemoth to Nis because he could kill some.
Yeah, it's a good matchup anyway for Behemoth.
Yeah, and then I put my Nis across from his Nis also.
He's still a new Crix player too.
Sure.
Brian White, but he's...
I mean, Brian White is probably the best technical player in the country, I think.
He's very good.
Yeah. I think he's the best technical player in the country. Anyway, we play our game, and this scenario is the where you have it's fire
support
fire group
fire support the one that I played
and so I've decided that I'm going to win this game by using Sorsha's feet to time walk him, score two then score three,
mm-hmm.
Or score three and then score two, one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to kill his objective, that's one, and I'm going to score both flags for three, and then be able to dominate either one with Sorsha with a wind rush to win on the next turn. So that's so I played the entire game protecting Behemoth, so forcing him to have the situation where he has to feet to kill Behemoth, otherwise Behemoth runs the table.
Not letting him feet to kill Sorsha.
Not letting him feet to kill Sorsha, and setting up my entire game. If you watch, you'll have to watch it in an end game. Like, I play the entire game trying to set up the feet, score twice situation. So that was my game plan going in, and I think I executed it pretty well. But it was a tough game. Like, it was really rough. Because
I kind of want to watch this game on end game. Like, it sounded like it was a really, really good one.
It was a really good game. And Brian White is just such a great guy. Like, there's actually a moment where I activated my light cav, and then I went to activate something else, and I think I like moved one model or something. I'm like, holy crap, I need to light cav move those guys. He goes, go ahead, and he let me light cav them.
Yeah.
I mean, I caught it pretty quick, and he could easily have said, sorry, dude, tournament.
Yep.
And that would have completely changed the game, but he didn't.
I love Brian White.
I do too.
I have not talked to him enough.
He's just a really good guy. And then the other thing that I really like about playing against him is that it takes a lot of the stress out of the game because he forgets very few things. And that includes both of his effects and your effects. And, like, sometimes just you forgetting your own effects, like, can have a big influence on the game, you know?
Yeah,
like,
he's also...
I did this thing on this guy. Like, he's like, you know, like, he'll tell you.
Yeah.
You know, or I can't think of any...
Well, I mean, he's just incredibly fair. So he will enforce rules that are good for him equally as much as he'll enforce rules that are bad for him. Yes. 100% of the time. Like, I've never seen him do anything that wasn't.
I try and play as much the same way as I possibly can.
So. Yeah, but I'm just not as good at it as Brian is. Like, yeah. he remembers rules better than me. But anyway, the way that the other situation I was looking to create in that game was I had to prevent an Excarnate from blowing me out.
Mm-hmm.
And he only has one Arc Node. And he ran the Arc Node forward and put it in the woods. So I minifeeded Dougal bottom of one and got Nis Hunters and some other stuff into, like, all the Merc stuff into the Arc Node, mm-hmm. barely. And Holt had to roll a 9 on his last shot to finish knocking the Arc Node out because my dice were just not great.
Mm-hmm. Did
also,
you do a big 10-man CRA with the Nis, or...?
I tried, only I only got 4 in range. Uh-huh. That's like, because he had done a good job positioning, but I'm not sure he considered that I would use Dougal's mini feet for that. Yeah, double potteration. And then also, Kel Balok was probably an eighth of an inch out from aiming and double tapping it.
Oof.
But it was towed into a forest, so I needed him to aim to hit anyway. Like, I would have been sevens. But anyway, I knocked the Arc Node out early. So That's the other part of that game plan that I really needed, is because the Excarnate blows me out.
Yep.
Yeah, Excarnate.
Really bad.
Oh, my solo!
Excarnate destroys that list so thoroughly.
Yeah.
It goes from Oceans 18 to Oceans 1.
Yeah. But the thing that was interesting in that game, Brian did a really good job of protecting his Bile Thralls, because if I ever got an opportunity, I was totally going to freezing grip those guys, because then I can just like play with impunity for that turn. But he never gave me the opportunity to freezing grip him. So I was just like, come on, Brian. Just poke one out from around the corner. And he's like, well, you could move into the cloud if you want and get him. I'm like, no, that's a terrible idea. There's this Helldiver token right there. You know, like, I just die.
It's like decisions you need to make, John.
Yeah. But basically the way the game came down was exactly how I planned it out. I used a forest and a cloud template to keep Sorcerer alive for a couple turns. A really big moment in the game, Brian missed a Bane Knight attack after Tartarus had cursed Gorman and missed that attack. So that was really unlucky.
Sixes.
Yep.
Those are hard to roll, dog.
Yep. So if Gorman had died there, then I don't know what I would have done. I would have had to put Sorcerer like in the middle of the forest because of Killbox, and it would have been a little awkward.
Yeah, she doesn't have Pathfinder.
Right. But it didn't happen that way. And then, I won on Scenario. So that was my second round.
Good. Well
really
done.
Good game. You should actually watch that game. That game is a really interesting game because it'll really tell you a lot about that Ocean's 18 list and what it does. Just the way it plays and the way it plays keep away and how good it is at removing opponents' models with no retaliation.
So Nigel would like to ask Matty K to take that video down immediately.
Yes.
Yeah. No, yeah. And I think Nigel wants people to know about that list because it's interesting because I know I looked at that list and I immediately dismissed it.
I love how Nigel is just screaming, listening to this podcast, screaming right now at you.
Why?
Because he doesn't want people to know that list.
No, he does.
Okay.
He does because he talks about it all the time on his podcast.
Yeah.
And you look at that and you're just like, I don't see how this can possibly be good. There's like 10 models in this list.
Yeah, I know. It's the same way. I was like, oh, this list just seems gimmicky. And
yeah.
I mean, I don't think it's good. I've beaten it every time I played against it.
Oh, my God.
And right now, Nigel's screaming at you for that part of the podcast.
But yeah, no, it was good. And then third round, I played Butcher 3 against Will Pagani.
Ah, dang it. You never played the list. Did you play the last list?
No, but I can talk about it for a minute.
Oh, God. Okay. But yeah, talk about the Pagani game.
That game, I won't go. This game was also recorded. This is another game that I'm not proud of. So, something you should know about me: if I've never played a list before, it takes me at least one game to just get the nuts and bolts to just be able to move around and do stuff.
Oh, and you give me so much crap about playing the Max and Gordon list for the first time ever.
I don't get shot with airs twice. Like that didn't happen.
Uh huh. Something else probably happened that was pretty bad.
No, feeding
with P-Source at a very inopportune time.
Okay, well, it's almost never wrong to feed with P-Source. Like, that feed's always good, but anyway.
Just bottom of one.
Top of one.
Top of one. Click!
But the...
Don't need.
So a couple things I did. I forgot to deploy Saxon Oryk, and then I also forgot to deploy 4 Widowmakers.
Jesus.
So I played 6 points down. That was the first mistake.
This is the inverse of Gen Con.
Right. Well, I'm making up for lost time.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Will was playing his Assyria list, and the whole game, like, I felt like Hyperion was the only thing really that threatened Butcher. I misdiagnosed that. The Arc Nodes are very dangerous to Butcher too because they have Combo Strike.
If you're not camping anything on Butcher.
Yeah, so that was one thing that caused me to lose. And then if you watch me play early, it took me a little bit to figure out how I was going to play that game. Like, I didn't have a plan, and you can kind of tell. And then you'll see around turn two, I finally, like, figure out, oh, yeah, this is what I need to do in this matchup. And then I get way more deliberate with where I put stuff. And basically it was to set up a core bow move with Butcher and then get Butcher into Hyperion, kill Hyperion, and then, like, sort of run the table from there.
Yeah.
Some highlights in that game. I put Covering Fire in front of Beastone 9 to get into the zone. We were playing Destruction. And Will was really aggressive. He just ran everything forward. He got first turn, which I think first turn is really important for him because if I had owned the zone, like, he couldn't put anything in the zone the Butcher couldn't clear.
First turn against me, too, and that ended up being a really big deal because he could hide behind the walls that I placed.
Yeah. But,
Runes of War just sucks.
Yeah. I mean, you really want to go first with Runes of War.
Yeah. Well, you really want to go first with Trolls.
But I feel like if I had played that Butcher list one time before I played this game with Will, I probably could have pretty easily won. As it was, I had a really good chance to win because the matchup was that good for me. and give Will all the credit. Like, he did everything he needed to do to win that game. And I would say he got a little bit lucky. But basically, the way the game boiled down was I used a Corbo move to get Butcher onto Hyperion, just like I predicted. Because with the Corbo move, Butcher outthreats Hyperion, and then he just kills it. I mean, he's dice minus 3 on 3 dice. He does 8 per attack.
Yeah.
I mean, he just kills it. And I should be camping
12 focus worth of...
Yeah, I should be camping 2 to 3. As it was, I missed an attack, and my dice rolls were really low. So I actually failed to kill Hyperion with Butcher.
Yeah, which is really, really unlikely.
Yeah. I left him with, like, 10. So I had to use Alexia 2 to drop off a couple of Weapon Masters to charge Hyperion, which could have charged the House Guard Thane.
Yep.
Or at least engaged him.
It would have been really... Probably would have been... Yeah. The difference.
Yeah. So basically, I kill Hyperion. Butcher's on no camp. Will only has basically the House Guard Thane and his Arc Node for things that can actually hurt me. Now, had I deployed Widowmakers, like, I would have thinned out a lot more of his stuff early, particularly those guys. And had I I really was in the mindset of using Grey Lord Turnians as cloud bots to keep Butcher safe.
Yeah.
But I could have turned those sprays loose, and I would have just wrecked a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
So had I played that game one time, I would have recognized a lot of those things.
Also, Iris could have shot the Arc Node.
Yeah.
And
had I identified the Arc Node as a threat, I could have shot the Arc Node, and then he couldn't have allocated to it. So basically what happened is I kill Hyperion, Arc Node ends up, he has to clear a bunch of stuff in the way. So, again, if I use the Turnians to kill a bunch of his stuff, he doesn't have that option.
You killed Hyperion. He activated Assyria, popped his feet.
Blinding Lighted Butcher.
Walked forward, Blinding Lighted Butcher.
Walked into his melee range, Blinding Lighted Butcher.
Yeah, because otherwise he's an Erech Marker and engaged. So, Blinding Lighted Butcher, charged him with the Thane, rolled really well because of the feet.
Yep.
And then cleared off the Chimera. Yep. And it's a Chimera, right?
Yep.
Yes.
And then it, you know, turned around and combo struck.
Yep.
Butcher, and then, you know, it was pretty much all over.
Yep.
Because Butcher was camping 0.
Yep.
So without the feet,
16.
He doesn't do it. Without the House Guard Thane, he probably doesn't do it. Without the Arc Node, he for sure doesn't do it. Like, you had a lot of outs. I mean, yeah, it was a really good matchup for you.
I mean, that caster's OP, so I'm, you know.
I think that it was just exactly like you said. Like, it was the same thing that I was sort of going into my list. Like, I was very inexperienced with my list. You were very inexperienced with your list and your faction.
What's a Kador?
And he probably doesn't have a lot of experience with Assyria, but he's probably got way more experience with Assyria than you had with.
Yeah. I mean, Will plays more than anybody I know. And I give him all the credit. He did everything he needed to do to win. I had a lot of ways to play that game a lot better, in which case I could have denied him any chance of winning.
Yep.
But you'll have to watch Butcher's epic dice fail. Like, it is really, really bad when I go to kill Hyperion.
Yep. Other notable things that happened in that game, Hyperion crit consumed, like, 6 IFP.
Yeah, I gave him that. That's amazing.
I did that to Nate. He
raged.
Was not happy.
Yeah.
I got the solo too.
So then did you drop after that game?
I did. I probably should have played. I probably could have got all the way up to second because my strength of schedule was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because Brian White went on to win. Will Pagani went on to win the whole thing.
It was overall a pretty good Masters.
And I scored a lot of control points.
So
I think I could have got all the way up to second. But I thought it was final table variant, and then they kind of, I didn't really want to play.
We had a 24-hour drive ahead of us. We knew we needed to get it on the road.
Yeah.
It was actually...
Yeah, fair enough.
Keith's unimpressed.
I would have had to play Irsk 2 versus Kane 2. I'm not sure I could have won that game.
That was like a little fart.
He's giving like the sad eyes too.
So you didn't play another match, but I want to talk about this Iris Kliss because when you guys came home, I saw Nigel playing it. It made my dick rock hard. There's so many sweet little subtle synergies that like
you haven't seen that list before.
No,
he's played it at Mayhem Cups and everything.
I hadn't, but the list is sweet.
It's the Nigel rips off Keith's good ideas. Epic Irisk.
You mean Nigel rips off Jim's epic Irisk list?
No, because Jim's idea was I should play Pirates with Shay because it's the most obvious thing in the world. Mine was, can we convert Pirates into another faction? And Nigel was like, oh, I can do that too. He's copying me.
Nigel was the originator.
Anyway, you're right, though. There is a lot of really interesting. Like, my favorite thing in the list is Hotshot on one of the Pirates.
Not Hotshot, but Fire for Effect.
Fire for Effect.
Yeah, it's so sexy.
He casts Fire for Effect on it. So the list is Epic Irisk, Spriggan, Wardog, Max Ironfang, Pikeman, non-black dragons, Max Sea Dogs, and then Doc, Hawk, Rock Bottom, Ragman.
Importantly, the Sea Dogs do not have walls. They have
Malachev and three riflemen.
Yep.
And the Great Bears. And Grey Lord Tyrion.
Yep. All that stuff. So.
And Ragman.
Yeah, they're talking about putting, you can cast, with Valachev, the Sea Dogs become friendly faction. You can cast Fire for Effect on one of the
Riflemen.
And then they can do a three-man CRA, leading with the Fire for Affected guy.
It becomes a Rat 9 boosted POW 15 from 14.
Yeah, boost to hit, boosted damage, POW 15.
POW 15, Rat 9.
It, like, just kills.
The Sprig until you can light somebody up. You can just be like, whoop, Eris is now flared.
It's just a pirate laser beam, baby.
That I guarantee you nobody will see coming.
Yeah.
Like, well, be like,
You'll cast Fire for Effect on the Sea Dog or on the Sea Dog Rifleman, and they'll like your opponent will probably be like, that's kind of cute. And then you actually do the CRA, and they're like, what?
Coin for a money shot.
Yeah.
Just like, go crazy.
God, it's so sweet. And then, like,
although, if you coin for a money shot, you lose tough.
No, you don't,
because Iris gives friendly faction models in his command area tough.
Oh, man.
Mind blown!
He's the best pirate caster.
He might be the best pirate caster. He can also make them weapon masters.
Yeah, you can battle lust them. So
which also works on their guns.
Yeah, they could be double weapon master with Hawk.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Those guys with battle lust, so good. So good.
It's pretty sweet.
And Ragman. So, I mean, that list just... I just felt like if I had played against Trevi playing Kane 2, that I would have got Eris shot to death. Because I don't know how you protect him. Pretty hard.
You hide behind a sea of pirates.
Hope you make those tough checks.
And Spriggan and... Yep.
So quickly, in my round 2, I didn't drop because that's not how I roll.
Well, you were going to drop, and then they told you that you can get points.
No, I double-checked and made sure that points was a thing.
You could get points for War Machine Weekend Invitational, and you were like, well, I love points.
So round 2, I was playing against Trevor from Chain Attack, and I was in not the greatest of moods.
By the way, you never want to play Keith after he loses a game. It is the worst experience ever.
Except perhaps for playing Jim after he's lost a game. He doesn't play anymore.
I mean, especially when he loses. Like, I've seen Keith lose games to, like, Will and, like, other games that he felt like he played well, like, and he's, like, in a pretty good mood. But when you lose a game to Dice, like, it's just... Then it's like evil Keith comes out.
I was nice enough to Trevor because I like Trevor.
Yeah, we all love Trevor.
And then, but I was like, not really in the mood for doing things that are new to me or at all. I'm just like, I'm going to slip into my oldest, comfiest pair of shoes and settle in for a game. So I was like, epic glitch. And it was fire support, so I just sort of executed a pretty standard. Lich gets to one of the flags and makes it his house, and then says to Scorn, can you make me move? And Scorn usually says no to that. He was playing Epic Hexeris. Big turning points in the game where I moved two Bile Thralls pretty far forward with basically the it's kind of like the ultimatum, like, commit something to remove these Bile Thralls or let hell be unleashed upon you. And one of them lived. And so that resulted, in an Excarnate that removed 9 Slingers.
Yeah, that's why Reavers are so sweet.
And then I was able to teleport to a Wreck Marker that I had placed. Originally, it was an Arc Node that I placed in base-to-base with a flag that then became a Wreck Marker in base-to-base with a flag.
How convenient! wish I had 4-point Wreck Markers to spawn.
I wish I didn't have to kill the stupid Arc Node, because I know exactly what he's doing. Let Lich run around with an Arc Node. Like, that's terrible for you.
The same way with most Crypticasters. Like, if you ever are watching an Iron Gauntlet Finals that Keith is part of again, and the commentators are like, what's he doing with that Arc Node? Like, I don't know. Like, it seems like it's just going to die. You're like, you can just nod your head knowingly.
All according to plan.
Because that's what we always do.
But yeah, so Lich was base-to-base with the flag, dominating with Howlbound up, a little bit of camp, nothing in the immediate vicinity. Feeling pretty good about things. I'd committed the knights to that side of the field. Tartarus got killed by a Hellfire because I always forget about stupid poo handlers.
So good.
Give me sight beyond sight.
Yep. And then on the other side, Gators were fighting. Gators and none of the heavies had committed. His Bronzeback nor Gladiator had not committed. So Gators were fighting against Thralls and Blood Witches. My Witches fled at one point, but had rallied back. The fight was kind of even-ish. Like, my Banes weren't doing extremely well. But all I wanted from that side of the table was for them to eventually destroy the objective. Like, I had no expectations of them other than eventually destroy the objective, which they were probably going to accomplish. But he went to try to kill Asphyxius at this point because I'd said, my house, now do something about it. So a Bronzeback got rushed and trampled up to me, switched to Beatback, at which point he was inside of Hellbound, so his Beatbacks were 1/2 inch, and he came up short of the second or third model he tried to Beatback to. Didn't get close enough to Lich and scooped.
Mm-hmm. Hellbound OP.
And that's why I think it's tough for Scorn fighting against Asphyxius without Karn, because when he goes into this is my house mode, like, you have to have something that can actually reach far enough.
No, sir, this is my house. Right. Get out.
Well, Karn's just
really,
like, I
really only Makeda's Karn does that, or Morgul's Karn, or Morgul's something, like,
yeah, Morgul's Karn can get
something
there
with a really long threat range.
So when you say this is my house, where is he on the table?
He's next to a flag.
Sitting next to a flag,
next to an objective
in the middle.
Going, points! Key's favorite thing. Points!
Ta-da!
Points! Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to stop.
I had one turn of being in mild danger because I was only camping 2.
Did you
2 with
skulls?
Hellbound up in a Wreck Marker. That was the closest to danger I ever was, with nothing in melee range.
The Wreck Marker makes that such a lot.
So it could have been like...
Well, and he can't be charged.
And he'd already feeded, so double Hellfire. I mean, Hellfire's not going to get the job done.
Yeah.
So what's going to... like
one shot that Lich!
And then every turn thereafter, he's going to be camping 6 or 7.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, it's like you can't charge
killed,
him. There's 5.
I've killed his Arc Node because he gave the Arc Node away for Tartarus.
Huh. Yeah. It's tough. I don't know. I feel better about the matchup. Not great, but better.
You should play it.
Against Keith?
Yeah, teach
yes.
your house son.
This is not going to be
well, so
fun.
I don't think Keith is going to give me all of his Bile Thralls in one turn. So...
No, here's the deal. You need to play against Keith so that you can beat other Lich players. You won't ever beat Keith, but...
Yeah. Well, I can already beat other Lich players, Alex Grant.
That hardly counts.
To be fair, that guy has actually played a game of War Machine. Playing,
didn't he just... He's never played Epic Witch before.
No, the guys in Minnesota made him start playing Epic Witch so they could test against the Epic
Witch.
He's
played like 20-plus games, and apparently he tore apart their meta up there.
Wow. Good job, Alex. None of my... comes down here and we're just like, Epic Witch, nope.
Then my last game was against Ben the Scarf.
Love that guy.
Playing Epic Striker against my E. Denny.
Wait, Striker 2?
Striker 2.
Okay, because 3 wasn't actually
out. No, he was not available. Okay. The only Epic Striker that there is at the moment.
Okay.
Which was an interesting choice. Like, I knew it was a possibility because I'd seen these guys play a lot that weekend, and I've heard them talk about, like, yeah, Crick's players never expect the Epic Striker drop. And I was like, I'm
Seth Rebuke is really good.
I'm expecting the Epic Striker drop.
Like, Rebuke is really good against Crick's.
And I completely nullified his feet, so the feet wasn't really an issue, but the turn of double Rebuke kind of felt like I'd been feated on, because my Satixis and my Bane Thralls had nothing to do.
Yeah, he runs Thorn, which I think is really interesting, because...
It was just a Lancer.
Oh, he changed it to a Lancer?
Yeah. For the three-list format, I think Thorn went elsewhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't... And they don't run Epic Rowdy. Rowdy.
Yeah.
Which...
Good
Epic Rowdy. No, they don't run Rowdy, which I tend to agree with. Like, Striker is as close enough to unkillable without the +2 defense. No,
I mean, if you're taking 9 points just to put him in base-to-base with Striker, I feel like you're doing it wrong.
9 points of support, probably too much.
Yeah. What? They're tag-teaming up the field, like, super fluff-like style.
High five. You're my best friend.
Why doesn't he have flank with Old Rowdy? And only Old Rowdy.
Because he's already dumb.
Yeah. So at any rate, it was Destruction. I went second. I could clear the zone, but I couldn't destroy the objective, when I feated. Or did I? Because I loosed some Mechanithralls in an unexpected way. No, I don't think I did. Anyway, I froze Striker within 12 inches of Denegra. And he tried to kill Denegra and came up short. The last attack was Runewood Run and then, Rolling Thunder, trying to chop me to death.
Oh, nice.
Rolling Thunder!
Which, Ben, I'm gonna point this out here. At the beginning of the game, when I went through an inventory of your magic weapons, you left that one out. Yep.
Ooh, disqualified immediately.
Sure did. That's all right.
Immediate disqualification.
And it turned out I could have feeded on Runewood, because Denegra, like, got up in there and then Hellmouthed the Hammer Dwarf, and I didn't think I was going to catch myself, but then I went down to measure it, and I was like, oh, sure did. Whoop! So Denegra, like, pulled herself in.
You hellmouthed yourself.
But I'd feeded beforehand, and if I'd feeded afterwards, I would have had Runewood. So I'd have been like, that would have been pretty smart. But...
Oh, my God.
It was like accidental brilliance, but not quite. So, yeah, I hellmouthed a whole bunch of stuff dead and froze his whole army in place. I put Deathjack in between Denegra and the Black 13th so that she wouldn't get shot at, but then stupid Vicky P bullet him down so that he could try to shoot me.
Victor Pendrake. What a boss.
Yeah. But yeah, Denegra lived, and then on the next turn I was like looking for a way to shovel him out, and then I just realized that Deathjack was pretty much in range to charge him, so I just cleared a path for Deathjack and put, after I Hellmouth Striker forward a little bit, so I just put Deathjack on Striker and he got there.
Nice.
It was a little dicey, but I wasn't really in the mood to, like, play a long game. I could have just killed, like, most of the rest of his infantry and kept going, but...
I love playing games when you're not in the mood to play a game.
Striker's so ridiculous of a caster that, like, you can get Deathjack on him and you're like, it's a little dicey.
16-16 is pretty good.
Yeah, Striker
style.
With almost no focus, because he'd been, like, at the end of his turn, he was trying to drift lightning storms onto Denegra to kill me.
Yeah.
So he was, like, camping one.
Yeah. So, but like him camping one is the equivalent of
with Arc
Denegra camping three. Him camping one with Arc Shield is the equivalent of Denegra fully camping.
Yep.
Like, that's ridiculous.
One short, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, he's. Which is one of the reasons why his Striker 3 incarnation, his defensive stats are so weird.
He just went down at defense.
Isn't he like 14-16?
He's 15-16. He should be 16-17.
Oh, man.
He should be.
So he's actually in the net.
15-17 would have been fine. A fine stat
line. I'm not sure about fine. I would have liked it. I'm not sure about fine.
He'd just be Siege, right?
In the
plus one defense on a large base.
Except Siege doesn't have Escort.
And Cray.
Oh, he has Escort. Oh, but yeah. You can't have Ice Court and Arcane Shield.
Correct.
So.
Correct. Oh, no, I have to put Arcane Shield on my Jax or something.
I'm just saying, like...
Rats.
He doesn't get... I mean... Striker 2 bothers me more.
I'm just... After Virus went 15-18, I'm like, I don't know what reality is anymore. Like, literally anything is possible. Striker being 16-17 in my mind was like, well, Virus exists, so...
Yeah. With Escort, it's not... I don't think it was... But anyway... So that was my last game. It was a lot of fun. I like hanging out with the Ben and Trevi in that group.
We had a ball at DeblaCon, and I guess those guys are coming to DeblaCon, apparently. So
also, shout out to the Dark Omen crew.
I like those guys.
Are sweeter than East Coasters have a right to be. And
maybe none of them live in New Jersey.
And they brewed a pretty good beer. I enjoyed that. I got a beer for losing in round one. Which made me a little nicer in round two.
Really?
That's what you did to Trevor when you were a little nicer?
I feel really sorry for Trevor. That was, you had a nicer.
I just played epically.
Hey, it wasn't like 2 years ago. If it had been 2 years ago, Trevor probably would have quit the game.
Oh, so. No, Trevor would have been literally dead.
No, Trevor just would hate us. Actually, I love Trevor. He's so much fun
to talk
about the game with, just in general. We had some really interesting conversations at War Machine or at DeblaCon.
Yeah, that will hopefully spawn topics in future podcasts for us.
So we have another topic I think we should get into quick. With
how's our time looking?
We're 2 hours and 12 minutes, but we can do this in 20 minutes.
Being that we talked about Adepticon, which is a three list format, and we just talked about a Masters event that was a three list format.
How do you build lists for your first three list event?
Before we get into this, I just want to say three lists, D&C 1, my least favorite.
It's actively bad.
All Masters this year are that same format, right? Like, the Masters format this year is three lists.
That's not what you guys played.
It's three lists, three or four rounds, right?
It's three lists. It should always be three lists, four rounds, which isn't...
It's
not as bad as three lists, three rounds, but it is actively bad.
It's bad because
you're going to be locked in one round.
You're locked in one or two, one of the two rounds.
But then, yeah, which sucks.
Mm-hmm.
So my thing is, when building for a three-list event, is I just don't know how to do it because I've never done it before. And this is why this kind of idea popped in my head to talk about on the podcast.
this is definitely, I ran into the same problem.
Because my two lists are like, right now it's like Mordekaiser or like Mordekaiser and Makeda. And then it's just like, well, how do I mean, there's Mordekaiser is my Crix matchup. Makeda is my kind of everything else matchup. What do I do with the third list? And
here's the key. If you're just trying to build for an environment where if you have two lists that are your go-tos already, and you're looking for a third just to get through the event, like this is before we get to the high level of it, which there is. I mean, there's definitely, as you get into the three list format, there's a lot that you can do with it. You can cover specific matchups with your third list. You can introduce a new generalist. But I think the easiest way...
You can also
ask
a hard skew question.
Yeah, you can ask a hard skew question. I think the easiest way to go about it is to identify a list for your faction that needs no characters whatsoever, or as few as possible, and preferably the ones that are uncommon in use. This is one of the reasons why I'm kind of excited about Striker 3 for Signar.
Yeah.
It's because the lists I've been building for him, that I've gone into the dojo with for him, use no characters that I'm otherwise like, damn, I don't have, like, damn you, Lattermore!
Yeah. Catherine Lattermore, oh, I need her.
Like, Runewood, no! Like, I don't use him otherwise either.
Yeah.
Those casters show up in a lot of different factions. Like, Xerxes is an interesting option in Scorn, especially the Carnage has been playing his theme force that uses
tier two
mini packs of all the different medium based infantry.
XEIs.
Yeah.
Which you can actually go and see. They just uploaded a video of him playing that against Menoth. So.
Yeah. I like that list a lot. That's a hard skew that doesn't absorb characters. So it's a list that forces your opponent to make different choices. It's a
just
list
by having it in your list option.
And like, it's a list that isn't going to hurt your other lists by detracting.
So like the Jarl list that we're talking about for Chad is an excellent third list.
Mm. Yeah. It's got Mulg.
It pulls Mulg, which is tough for trolls.
Which is fine. I'm just saying I like it as a third list because it presents a really hard skew where now your opponent, like, you can, it gives you information. When you sit down across from your opponent, you can immediately eliminate lists. Like, that list can't play against this list, period. Like, mm-hmm. there's just going to be some lists. Like, for example, a Pyrrhir-style Harpy list is not going to do anything to that list. It's going to be annoying. You're going to have trouble hitting, but they're not going to chew through it. This is never going to happen. Like, I got POW 15 guns. Congratulations. Have fun killing half a warden.
A million armor 21 guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Harvey still has to be scared of the two-hand cannons.
Yeah. But I like presenting a skew as my third list because it gives me information when I go to choose lists.
What about...
It's got to be a skew that you can play, though.
What about potentially, and not every faction can probably do this, and I'm not entirely sure how valid it would be, but potentially coming in with just like a run of skew lists and basically just every round being like, I'm going to play this game of rock, paper, scissors in the list selection phase, and if I choose rock and they choose paper, I just easily steamroll them. Well, like, just like doing
that's
that.
Not how rock, paper, scissors works. He chooses rock and they choose
paper. Oh, did I say paper? I don't know why I said paper.
Bad
I
mean, things happen.
I got steamrolled.
You're going to have
yeah,
a
well,
bad time.
That's how Crump hee-haws his way through a tournament.
No, I think that might...
That's one way to go about it. I just don't like that for the later rounds when you hit... Because then you're like... Especially if it's one of those where you get locked in at
maybe
some point.
Two skew lists and then like one like well-rounded thing that you're used to playing a
possibly,
lot
and then you hold your well-rounded one for as long as possible.
Right.
Here's... I mean,
it's a very weird format.
That's one way to go about it. I said I like to do skew lists. The other thing I really like to do in three list events, particularly in D&C 1 type where I know I'm going to get locked in, I like to build flexible lists that cover lots of matchups and that they have overlap with each other in matchups. So, for example, in the three Cotter lists I played, I felt like I could play Sorsha against, you know, Krix and Signar pretty well. Mm-hmm. And then I felt like I could play Butcher against any of the Hordes matchups. And then I felt like Irisk could play sort of against both in some
ways.
He's
a wild card.
Well, he just has a pretty well-balanced list, right? Like, mm-hmm. I don't love the Irisk list in the Krix matchup, but sometimes you just got to be like, okay, let's just both run our dudes in the middle of the table and fight, you know,
mm-hmm. yep.
and see what happens.
Yeah,
you know, even against Lich, you can be like, well, I got a 4+ tough to stop your Excarnate. Like, you can get lucky and just
something that
be
a
pain in the butt. But that's the reason why I settled on those three was I felt like I had good matchups for the field. And then if I had to, I could drop Irisk in a situation. Like, I felt like he had good matchups, but I also felt like he could be played in some of the other matchups and give me, like, a 50-50, 40-60 sort of situation
mm-hmm.
and where I just have to play.
It's a little bit more difficult with three lists because you have to be worried about, like, if you've only got one list that's really good at dealing with, like, Krix, for instance,
yeah.
or, like anything specific, basically, and you're really worried about that specific thing. Like, if you've only got one list that's really good at dealing with Morvana 2, well, that list also doubles up as dealing with Krix, you know?
Yeah.
And then you're like,
there's
a number of Krix players in the field, but there's also a number of Morvana 2 players in the field, and you hit multiples of them in a row. Like, you hit Krix round 1, and you're like, well, I got to drop this list. And then you hit Morvana 2 round 2, and you're like, well, now I have to drop this same list again, and then I'm locked out of it, and if I get this matchup again, I'm screwed.
Welcome to my Adepticon 2 years ago.
So,
I'm not sure that there actually is an answer to that. Like, you just have to have, like, which is what you like. It's like you have to have massive redundancy and, like, now.
Yeah, like, it makes sense.
I feel a little spoiled for choice as a Krix player going into a 3-round event because I'm like, well, I'll just build one of these as my mercenary list and load it up with all my favorite mercenary characters, which is something a lot of Krix players don't do, but is certainly an extremely viable option.
Yep.
And then I'm like, and I'll build this Denny 2 list and throw Deathjack in there and then some Satixis, and she's fine with that. And then I'll reserve Tartarus for the Asphyxius list, and that's the only character he needs, and three lists that fight pretty much whatever I want.
Thinking back
and
to...
are all, like, ridiculously strong.
Yeah.
Thinking back to, like, last year when I started, like, trying to figure out my Ret 1-2, I've realized now that there would be probably a better theory in three list events. So, like, for the same reason, like John pointed, of sort of two lists that have a lot of overlap between them in covering matchups. So, like, I really got stuck on playing Raven and Ossian as my 1-2, which is really, really weird because they're both, like, ranged heavy lists, except for the way I designed my lists.
Ossian killed heavies and...
Well, no. Ossian could still kill all the infantry, but if there was heavies, he would literally just destroy them. And then the Raven list would kill all of the infantry, but there was a heavy and a Hyperion and Invictors in the list, so that, like, if I had to sit down across from heavy armor pieces, like, I could still crack them. I couldn't trivially just blow them off the table like Ossian. And then vice versa, like, Ossian can't trivially just blow off, like, an entire Krix army, but there were enough.
So if I can try and put a concept around what you just said, and I actually think I agree with you, in three list, you're trying to create good matchups for your lists, and your lists also have to be able to play, like, secondary or tertiary or whatever you want to call it, matchups and give you a fair shot. So you're trying to create situations where you have an advantaged matchup. So you're trying to create like a 70-30, 80-20 situation.
Yeah.
But realistically, you're expecting your 60-40s and 50-50s.
But you want to at least have like a 50-50. So you can't... when you design your list trio, you have to kind of design for the field with, like Chad said, great redundancy. But you're also trying to... get yourself into advantaged matchups while also not skewing your list such that it puts you in disadvantaged matchups, which is kind of a hard thing to do.
It is. I was actually really, really proud of my Masters. Like, this was the first time I've ever played in a Masters with three lists, and I was just like, wow. I'm actually really proud of, like, my list selection here. Like, I felt like they all had, like... Because, I mean, as the Trollblood player, I'm primarily going into... I'm just terrified of Krix. I'm like, oh, God, screw Krix. Like, I don't want to fight... I don't want to see them. I don't want to fight them. Like, whatever. You know, I need to have an answer for them. But then I can't fall into that trap where I just have one Krix list, because if I hit Krix multiple times, and that's so common in Masters, you'd be like, oh, Krix again. Oh, Krix a third time.
Oh, hey, Keith Christensen. Oh, hey, Brian White. Yeah. Oh, my God. I mean, you probably didn't get through
like,
that anyway.
My lists were like, I had my Gristle list, and it's like, well, Gristle can play against Krix because she's got, you know, she can clear a lot of infantry off, and she's got the no orders, and that's really strong. Mm-hmm. Like, she's got some good Krix game. I've definitely, like, played her against Krix before and, like, done well. And then Hunter's Grim, like, sort of the same thing, you know, like, they clear a ton of infantry off, and as long as I don't have to worry about Incorporeal, like I said, like, that's a really strong Krix drop, and he's got answers to stealth and other things, you know. And then my third list was Runes of War, which is also really strong against Krix because it's got Purification, it's got, like, a large number of magical AoE, high-power magical AoEs.
High armor plus Banishing Ward, like, equals good times against Krix.
Yeah, high armor plus Banishing, like, and so I was just like, wow, like, actually all three of these lists, like, distinctly, like, sort of, like, can play against that matchup, so I really don't have to worry about that matchup at all. And then I just have to worry about, like, the kind of specific things that these lists are designed for, and they kind of, like, complement each other really, really well. It's just like, Runes of War is really, really good at cracking armor. Gristle is also good at cracking armor. Hunter's Grim is really good at clearing infantry. Gristle is also good at clearing infantry. So I've got, like, everything's got, like, multiple, like, all of my questions that I'm worried about, like, I have multiple answers for with, like, redundancy in my list. All of my problem matchups. Like, the only matchup that I felt like I was really, like, 100%, like, shoehorned with was Morvana 2, where it's like, well, I pretty much have to play Runes of War against that. But that was pretty much the only thing. Like, so, you know, I basically can save Runes of War once to just try and hit, you know.
Was there any circle in the top eight?
Anthony.
Oh, right.
Sure. There was two circle players.
So I think the difference in preparing for a Masters event and just, like, this upcoming Adepticon is that it's a field of 64 players rather than a field of 16 or 8.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't really know exactly what you're going to run into. So
I mean,
I think it'll be
for
really
example,
important.
One way that it skewed my list at, and sorry to interrupt, Colin, but just to illustrate what you're talking about, there was no Protectorate at the top in Teplicon, so there was no book.
Yeah, it's
so I was like,
action sucks.
Butcher 3 is amazing when there's no book.
So is Sorsha.
Yeah, actually, yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Legit, I was just like, because, yeah. So yeah. That actually factored heavily into my... list decisions.
Something, I'm not sure if this is where you were going, but another really important thing is, if you're playing three lists and you're not used to playing three lists before, is that more than just trying to get, even more than just trying to get, like, a matchup consideration for your third list, like, you know, where you're trying to cover your matchups of your first two lists, it's actually even way more 100% more important to just take a caster that you're familiar with to take a list. Like, if there's a third list that you're playing that you don't think really matches up well with your other two lists, but you're much more familiar playing with it, like, you know the caster better, like, you've played more games with it, more casual games with it or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, that's probably the one. Because, like, I actually did end up getting screwed by, like, Runes of War is an incredibly powerful, you know, widely considered to be the best quote-unquote troll list, yeah. And it kind of screwed me up playing it because I'm not very used to playing it,
mm-hmm.
You know, and if I had just taken another caster, like, I might have had a worse matchup, but I would have had much more familiarity with me might have, like, if I was playing Epic Madrak or if I was playing Borka or something like that, like, I might have
Grim
had
one.
Yeah, I might have had that extra familiarity would have, you know, given me a better game, whereas I was playing a list that was technically better and technically gave me a better matchup, but I felt like I performed less good with it because I wasn't as familiar with it. So that can be a big consideration too. If you're like, well, I've got these two lists that I normally play, and then this third list, I need to, you know, worry about my matchups. Like, you know, you might not have to do that. You might just be like, well, this is the cast that I played the third most, so I'm just going to take that.
Yeah.
Because knowing your list is actually more important than just,
I mean,
you know,
knowing is half the battle.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, the other thing.
The other half is red lasers and blue lasers.
Yeah. Another thing you can do in three lists, which is interesting, is you can take casters that have a more narrow focus and get away with it. Sometimes it can be hard to find a place to drop. So, like, Keith at Adepticon 2 years ago brought Haley one.
Yep.
And that turned out.
And I had 5 rounds of unplayable matchups for her.
You're just like, Protectorate.
But
it was, let's see,
Protectorate.
Protectorate.
Retribution.
No, Protectorate. Legion. Trolls all ranged. And
Trolls all ranged mode?
Yep.
What the fuck? This
is Jarl with, like, Bomber Blitzer, Double Impaler.
And you're just like, nope.
And then the last round was Epic Krieger.
Nice. So,
oh, my God.
Every single round. Like, can one of you not have 20 guns? One of you.
It's like all three of your casters are, like, going into a room. Like, let's pretend, like, Haley can talk to herself, you know. Her time-shifted self. Like, they're all walking into a room, you know, before the battle starts, and they're like, all right, which one of you wants this? And Haley's just like, nope. All right. Kane, you got this? He's like, nah. It's like, Haley, how you feeling? Like, no.
It was Haley, Kane, and Karis Lone. So it's Captain K Fresh with the pirate squad, Epic Kane with his usual rigmarole, and then and then
as the day goes on, Haley's hair is just getting more and more frazzled as she's just pulling on it.
It's like the first round of Veil 2, Kane's like, I got it. And everyone's K-Fresh and Haley are like, all right, it's good. Round 2 is the all trolls, and Haley, it's the trolls, and, like, Haley's looking down, she's like, trolls, yes! And then one of the lists is all guns, and she's like, eh. Carousel's like, I got it. Then round 3 was Jake Van Meter, and Haley was like, Carousel's like, we'll go for it. And then I played like a donkey and lost.
Didn't you play against me in that tournament?
Yeah, and then next round was against you.
Yeah.
Or no, I suppose I played against you before Jake. And it was Protectorate, and Haley was like,
God damn it.
Kane's like, I got it.
Haley, you're going to have to start pulling some weight here.
They're like, Haley, you are the weakest link on this team. She's like, look, if there's not guns, it's not going to be close, and I will destroy them. Give me that matchup. Come on. And they're like, and it's not happening. Step up to the plate. Come on.
It wasn't even Epic Kane. It was P-Kane with all the long gunners. And P-Kane was like, I got it for Protectorate. And he did. Handily.
You sucked out so bad in that game.
And then it was Van Meter, and Karislin stepped up, and then I let her down.
Yeah.
And then the last round, Haley was like, all right, you're up, Haley. Best of luck to you. And Will Pagani sat down with Epic Krueger.
Like, womp, womp.
But, that sounds like just epically bad luck.
No, that was. But
before Stormwall.
So I don't want that to scare people off, though, because you can definitely take casters that have a little bit more narrow focus, like a Haley one. Other casters that are good examples of this that can see play in a three-list format, like High Reclaimer. I actually happen to like High Reclaimer in a two-list format, but a lot of people feel like he has too many bad matchups.
But if you're looking at a list trio, that's like, you're like, no way of seeing through clouds, and no way of seeing through, oh, High Reclaimer, you're golden!
Yep. I think the prime example of that is the is P. Morvana for that issue. It's just like...
No purification.
It's like, purification, but played it already. No purification. No epic errors. Cha-ching! Auto victory! Because she just gets rolled by any upkeep removal.
Yeah.
And when it's not there, she just rolls the opponent.
Yeah.
Like, I sat down with Josh one time. I'm like, I got this crazy list to test out. And he, like, set his mercenaries on the table. He's just like, oh, wait, P. Morvana? And let me go change my lists. And I was just like, this, you can never play tester.
Oh, yeah. Because
like, people are
that.
Just like, well, I'm not going to take, like, no upkeep removal versus P. Morvana. And I'm like, correct. And I'm never going to take P. Morvana against the purification caster. And, like, because it's unfun games for, like, either matchup.
Yeah.
So
I mean, I've played that matchup against you. It wasn't fun. It took 5 hours to get our 50-point game done.
That sounds miserable.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, so you can dust out those, like I said, dust off those casters, like a P-Hex Harris could be really good, for example.
Yeah.
In a three-list format. I'm trying to think if there's a really good troll example. Trolls are actually kind of blessed with a lot
Bjorn.
Of...
Trolls actually, that's one of their biggest strengths, is that all their casters are pretty...
Yeah, they all end up, all their lists end up being fairly generalist.
Yep.
So is there a faction we would consider probably to be the weakest in this format?
It was Signar.
It might still be
Signar. I thought it was potentially Mercenaries.
Mercenaries also hate
it's
a
not
lot.
It's because you don't have options in your list. It's like,
honestly,
this list has to be Pirates.
Scorn actually might be able to make a...
I think Scorn makes fine lists.
Yeah, I think they're actually fine.
You don't think they're very reliant on, like, Tiberian and Mullet Karn?
Not really.
I think it's just because you can spread them out. So, like, my list also, can spread them out so well.
A lot of their beasts are fine.
It turns out Bronzebacks, while not being a character, are still Bronzebacks.
Well, like, the thing is, you can, like, Chain Gang can't take any character Warbeasts. And that's a very solid
list. That's a really
list.
Good list.
Yeah.
And then...
Yes, some powerful theme forces have altered the landscape for these three-list formats, and the inclusion of some new casters or some new characters have changed it. I don't think anyone is horrifically weak in three-list anymore like they used to be.
I can tell you that building Cador lists was especially challenging.
Yes, I think I was gonna mention, I think the three weakest are going to be Cador, Mercenaries, and Signar because of their dependence on the Mercenary characters.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, Cator was a little rough. I was just like, like, I could have made such a better two-list pairing than a three-list. It really stretched some of the characters that I really wanted. Like, for example, the Butcher three-list having Great Bears in that list would have been amazing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then, or Ragman, either one would have been really good.
Mercenaries have been given, are in better shape now than they would be otherwise, because you can play, like, Bart Galleon, and you can play Gordon's Earthbreaker or Awesome's Earthbreaker, and then you can probably still play a Pirate's Life.
Yeah.
Ion on Holt are the only questionable ones there. Yeah.
So
you can probably play a Pirate's Life with that. Ion on Holt.
The biggest bottleneck in Cador is Eris 2, because they have no upkeep removal except for Eris 2.
It's the same thing in Mercenaries.
Not true. Banishing Ward on Zarkova.
Bam. Problem solved.
It doesn't remove defensive buffs.
It does not remove defensive buffs.
Yeah. I mean, so it's not really.
Mercs are in the same boat, right? Aren't
well,
isn't
most
Signar
of the time
in the same boat? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like Cador players.
Most of the time when people talk about upkeep
everyone can take up.
Shut up, Jesus. Most of the time when people talk about upkeep removal, they're talking about Crippling Grasp.
I also like to be able to remove defensive buffs.
Yeah, that's
like Arcane Shield's a big deal.
Arcane Shield and Defender's Ward are two of like actually any armor buff, Defender's Ward, Inviolable Resolve, you know, whatever name your armor buff.
Yeah, pick your poison, Elemental Communion.
Yep.
Yep. Another one. So I don't know.
It was a weird hole that Cator has.
Yeah, well, I think...
Signar and Mercenaries.
Yeah, all three of them have that same hole.
Does Signar... Yeah, Signar doesn't have another way, I guess.
I mean, like...
They have Haley, too, though.
Like, Scorn has no way... Except for a Throlg. Scorn has no way of removing any upkeeps.
Shaman.
Actually, retribution from,
like,
is
okay,
in the same
like
mode
crippling grasp. Except you Calissa. Can remove crippling. Like those, you can't remove Arcane Shield, Defender's Ward, anything like that.
So. I mean, admittedly, I come from Protectorate, where I'm kind of spoiled. Where I'm just like, I often don't play Eris 2 because I'm playing two Purification casters. So, you know, whatever. But yeah. So that. I have a skewed perspective, but it just really was. I was like, this really sucks. Where am I going to put Eris?
It turns out those defensive upkeeps and even the offensive upkeeps were put in the game with the intention that they would sometimes be upkept, that they would not always be removed trivially.
I like it better.
Odd that it is to yeah. think that
well,
way.
I mean, they could turn Crippling Grasp into a non-upkeep.
No! Yeah. No! No, 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 Colin. Because I do not want two of my units Crippling Grasp.
The next time
every
Nigel
turn.
Says that you should be developing this game, I'm just going to repeat that.
Well, you see, it would be a new rule.
It would have to be a new rule. A new Crippling Grasp.
Super legit.
All right. Well, we're kind of wrapping up, but I do have a question for the listeners. And that is... Should Colin and the crew start a second podcast, would you guys listen to it? I think actually I will listen to it because I had such a good time listening to you guys. You had so much exuberance and good energy. Like, I loved it. That was probably my favorite thing I've listened to in forever.
Yeah. So we're considering taking the cast from episode 160 and making it their own podcast, basically.
And come up with an... Also new.
No, we got our
not
name.
A question.
We got the name.
No, we need yeah, listeners propose a name.
It's
and
Muse.
Then we'll reject it.
It's Muse 2.
No.
T-O-O.
No, I'm not going to reveal the name I want it to be.
No, it's Muse 2. That's totally the name. Yeah. Turns out I'm the president and CEO. That's happening.
I write the episodes. I write what's on the top of the sheet. I write that.
Yeah?
So...
All right, before we devolve into
I don't think you
want to
have this
at all, let's wrap all right, up for the day. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. How's the store looking these days?
Oh, it's total crap right now until I get the laser up and running again. Okay. But the good news, that's going to be up and operational soon, so I'll be able to restock the store.
Okay.
So, but there's not a lot of selection there right now.
So ear to the ground for future updates on the Muse store news to come soon. Keep an eye on us on Facebook and Twitter. We try to be a little bit more active, and when things are happening, we're
also, what the F? Chain Attack has got 2,350 likes on Facebook. You guys have completely failed us. I'm so disappointed right now.
You know why that is, right?
Why is that?
Because they post spoilers and we don't.
I mean, that's part of it. They're actually active on their Facebook, so we post some spoilers, but...
After they post spoilers, we post links to their spoilers.
Come look at us!
That's all I do on Twitter is I just retweet what they've already tweeted.
So it's Colin's
fault. It's all my fault.
That's everything.
Unlike Chain Attack, like Muzon Minis. No, that's going to happen.
That's not even a duck call.
No, that's not a duck call. That's a call to action.
You can just always quack at John. It's appropriate in any situation.
Well, and also unlike Kesha. So
yeah, we don't care about Kesha. We've been honest to God.
Did we catch Kesha?
Like, this has been
having to listen to Trevor tell me that he is 500 likes ahead of us on is just killing me. Killing
Lance,
me every day.
Chad.
Josh.
And John.
Thanks
for
listening.
Lance signed out.
Great sign off.
Awesome.
We just
signed out the people on the sheet, Colin.
Yeah,
we just signed out the people that were on the sheet.
4 hours.
We're doing like an hour.
4 hours. 5 hours.
We'll be here all night long.
Impera, blow my brains out.
Test, test, test. Test, test, test.
Wait, is it is Imperatus or Imperatus? John, when you get your...
What's gonna be great is that eventually some of us are gonna forget the tune. We're just gonna go off in different directions.
What neat... Oh, God. John, if your laser store gets back up and running...
If your laser store...
When your laser store gets back up and running, you need on Black Friday to have a Black Friday bundle called the Brack Friday Bundaroo.
Okay.
Do it for Keith and I.
Black Friday, brother.
Black Friday.
Black Friday, brother.
I'm not really into cashing in on my...
in his Frenchness?
On my national origin.
I mean, it's funny.
I just don't think...
Your national origin?
I mean, Nick, we could just...
Of America?
Was born in Waterloo?
No, damn it. Shut up. All right, we're preambling. We are recording. We're testing mics.
Wiener. So wait, we never actually talked about order.
Yeah, what do you mean?
No, we're fine. We'll just go in the order that's there.
We never talked about
Chad's list. You're so bad.
What? You're bad.
I don't even know what your lists are.
I really wish you would have played drums.
Nice.
Oh.
I'm in one of your lists. High five.
I had a thought about that list because John, our troll John at the shop said something. He's talking about, I'm playing Calandra list with double warders. And I was like, you just put Calandra in that list, and magic happens. Because
it was literally nothing to do with what John said, other than the word Calandra, and Keith completely ignored everything John was talking to him about.
Yeah, I just blanked out at that point. I think he was saying some other stuff, but I was like, magic happens if they don't have a mat buff.
It's What's the
just
draw list?
Game over.
What is the draw list?
It's like the miserable meat mat.
You lose a lot for not having
Wait,
them.
What?
Fast?
Oh, they're not fast. That's right.
Yeah. You do lose something.
You do lose something. That's true. The Jarl does serve a very important purpose.
I did play that Jarl list with Gristle at the helm. Gristle won against Jose, and it was the exact same. It was just like he killed a couple of things, like on the approach, and I, you know, had nothing to shoot back with, like even less because Jarl wasn't there, you know. And I was just like, oh god, this list just, I don't know about this list. And then like I got to the line of engagement, and his entire army was just like. Pfft. I was like, oh man, this is pretty legit.
I'm not sure I can beat that list unless I tool for it.
Wait, there's not a mountain king in
it. I think I just need to
miserable meat ill.
I think I just need to, oh man, I didn't even play Mulg with Gristle, yeah. But she's got Hallowed Avenger. So that might even be
counter charging Mulg.
That might even be really good.
That seems good.
Like they finally kill Hallowed a warder.
Avenger is most similar to Countercharge, not Vengeance, right?
No, it's when they kill a warrior model but within 5 inches of a warbeast of the warbeast that it's cast on. That warbeast can charge.
Okay,
God, I would most be so.
So it's like they finally kill a warder. They're like, yes, I finally got one, and Wog's like, come on,
<"Badoosh!">
I would be so pissed if I got countercharged by Mulg and then crit slam.
Oh my God!
Oh my.
Brendan was playing against Signar Dylan, and apparently Mulg was blinded.
Is it Brandon or Brandon?
Brandon. But anyway.
For some reason we call him Brandon, yeah. Too. It's really weird.
Mulg was blinded and frenzied, and it was with Doomshaper, and he's like, a blinded frenzy turn. Brandon's like, I'm going to choose the frenzy target, my own Boomhowler. Then proceeds to crit slam Boomhowler into fucking Gorman.
Yeah!
Just like,
that is amazing.
It's like, what the fuck are you doing? You're choosing your frenzy target as your Boomhowler?
Trollblood of the year.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's actually pretty sweet.
I love that play where you're just like, well.
F. Gorman.
Because normally your play when you get blinded is you're just like, sack action, engage Gorman. You. And they're like, when you frenzy, you're like, God damn it, he's going to get to blind me
language,
again.
Language.
Is there anything that I can do to stop this?
Crit slam my own boom.
That's amazing.
I still have not gotten it to happen, but one day I will, where I'll get the perfect situation where I'm playing Epic Doomshaper to bait someone. Like, I'll just walk out and be like, oh, no, I've left Doomshaper with his ass hanging out in the wind, and there's a Molokarn over there. I hope he doesn't come to get me. And then Molokarn's like, get him, charge! And then it's like, oh, protective fit. And then Mug just comes up, skadoosh!
Okay. Slams him.
I have done that many more than one time. It's pretty great.
Every time.
God. I used to get Chris just by specifically having Mog like facing another direction.
I saw a game like that.
I was like, "Oh, I'm not. I'm not looking at Doomshaper. Can't protect him when I'm over here."
Yep. Oh, damn it.
The worst is that it always happens like after you've already like 100% committed to the plan.
Yeah, yep. So Makeda's ass is hanging out in the wind to get control area.
Yeah,
and
they're like protect you as soon as you say for the word protective fit. They're like, "Well, oh god damn."
But I like it when Mog plays when he plays like racquetball, and because you're like trying to get a ranged assassination, and he like protective fits, and he's like moving in front of the other guy that was going to shoot him, and they're like,
yeah.
Ah, damn it! And then you're like, okay, finally finagle another shot, and then he's like scooches over here and blocks something else, and you're just like,
I like to think of that like visually, like the way that that would be represented in like an actual like recreation. You know, like, there's this, like, unit of riflemen, like, and they've got a bead on, they're looking through their scopes, and they've got a bead on Doomshaper's head or whatever, and they're like, yeah, take the shot. And they pull the trigger once, and then Mulk's face just appears in their scope. Like, hey, what's up?
That'd be terrifying.
Oh, yeah. Like, if I actually saw Mulk in real life, like, you guys would all be slipping and sliding. You'd all be slipping and sliding on the crap that was rolling out of the back of me while I was running the other direction.
I mean, hell, if I saw, like, a pygmy in real life, I would be running the other direction. These guys are freaky looking.
Blue people! Ah! I hate the Smurfs!
No. Oh, my God, that is the ugliest Smurf I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Where's my cat?
We could talk about that Chrysalis to end up just a second, I guess.
Perchance. Perchance